All right, and Merry Christmas. Welcome to the Pro Photo Show Christmas episode for 2011. It's podcast number 82 for December 9th, 2011. And let's see, I think we were going to start with a few Christmas carols or something that me and Dennis were kind of chatting about this. Dennis, how about like chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Z Power nipping at your ear? Or wrong. Do you remember how that goes?
Welcome to Pro Photo Show, the resource for professional and enthusiast photographers, a member of the Blueberry Network and the Tech Podcast Network. For show notes, tips, forums, and more, visit us online at profotoshow.net.
Well, either way, it's going to be awkward with the whole chestnuts and the ears and everything. So,
that might be a minus one. I'll let you take it from here. Maybe you have a better idea. We're just trying to bring some Christmas cheer into everyone's lives.
Yeah,
right here
and
today.
And it's kind of like, you know, Nikon, Canon, more like, do you like Jingle Bells or Jingle Bell Rock? Brady, what kind of guy are you?
I'm more of a country music kind of guy. So,
like a country version.
Take it for what it's worth.
Well, and we also have Jonathan on here, and Jonathan, what I'm thinking, guys, is that by the end of this cozy warm show, I mean, we got the nice warm lights on, it's cool outside, we're in this warm thing with the mic set up, and by the end of this show, Canon and Nikon and Adobe and Apple and Google are all going to be standing around the campfire singing Kumbaya and taking photos on their iPhones and their digital SLRs. At the same time, yes.
Yeah.
And some of the people from Apple may have the new Leica case for their iPhone, so they fit in a little better. But in any case, welcome to the show. I'm not sure how much of that will cut out. I'm feeling a little bit incomplete because we lacked the whole scripted intro for the show, and this is all going to be so unprofessional. Thanks to me. But let's get started, and let's start off this Christmas 2011. We've got lots of fun things to talk about. We're going to get into a little bit of news. There doesn't seem to be a ton going on, obviously, and usually we're way behind the news anyhow. We kind of talk about things when they get in our hands, but we're going to touch on a few topics. We're going to get into hopefully a few lightning rounds, some tips maybe on light, working with light and making it sing, maybe some ideas for 2012. We're going to kind of keep it on a positive note here and just get some fired up and ready to go as we come into the new year. And we're also going to talk about lots of cool gadgets, Christmas ideas, and most of these Christmas ideas we're talking about are probably going to be for yourself, but you know, we're used to that as photographers. That's kind of how we do it, because we go and we get Christmas gifts, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a weight thing with Santa, that, you know, the weight of the digital SLRs and stuff versus his weight, that the reindeer just aren't kicking in with that, or if it's, you know, why I always get socks and stuff instead of cool, you know, L lenses. But we may just have to kind of fend for ourselves this year, guys, as photographers, and buy our own Christmas gifts.
Let's do it.
In the absence of news, let's talk rumors. Not for too long, though. And that's the D800. Have you guys been watching this at all? It looks like presumably these rumors are pretty solid, and the Nikon D800 is going to be coming out and having like 36 megapixels, which is quite an uptick in resolution if that's true. Any thoughts? Anybody else been monitoring that at all?
Well, yeah, totally. I mean, I'd shoot Nikon, and that would be, I mean, I'm still living in the land of 12 megapixel sensors, and I'm just happy as it is. But as you know, our mutual friend Larry has the Nikon D3X, I believe.
Right.
And with the larger sensor and more pixels like that. And even that is kind of like, whoa. You know, in one part, it makes you very excited because I'm still using my primary camera as the D700. But it makes you excited not only for the possible rumors of the D800, but what will they make their flagship camera? You know, well, how many bells and whistles can you throw on the flagship camera to make it differentiate that much from that much power? But like you said, it's all rumors, but it's enough to get excited about, though.
Well, it's all rumors, and it's one of those rumors that you would say, oh, there's no way they're going to jump from where they are now to, you know, all of a sudden be at 36 megapixels. That's way more than pretty much all the DSLRs out there. And it's a huge jump, which for me, I mean, I'm a big print guy. I'm a wall portrait guy. So that would be huge for me. I mean, I max out my pixels all the time. And I guess a lot of people maybe don't care as much, but there are those of those that really want that resolution, and that'd be huge. But it sounds like one of those rumors that's just made up, but more and more it seems like it's turning up to be information that people are saying is pretty good. Now, I'm not going to say it's true, but it's an interesting thing. I could use 36 megapixels in a heartbeat. I could use 300 megapixels, quite frankly, which is why I've been working with the 4x5 film. Anybody else here, would you guys have a joy in having 36 megapixels? Jonathan, by the way, I haven't introduced Jonathan. You're new to the show. Jonathan, how do you pronounce your last name? Rather than say it wrong, I will let you do it.
No problem. It's Jonathan Belaski.
Great. Welcome to the show. And give us, just kind of give us your 20-second bio. I know you're up there in Canada. And just tell us what you do so people are kind of in the groove.
So I'm a commercial and editorial photographer, and I'm based just outside of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And we shoot everything from large ad campaigns to advertising and promotional campaigns for NHL and NFL teams, as well as going through to the NBA teams and everything like that. And then with that type of stuff, we also go and shoot educational institutes, stock photography, and a whole bunch of range of projects. And gotcha. Yeah, so, and I'm a Canon user, but in my studio as well, we also have a couple Phase 1 camera systems as well.
Right, and in terms of this Nikon, I mean, to kind of keep us on track here, I know you use the Phase 1, so you obviously have a use for that larger format. Do you think something like this in a DSLR is a good thing?
Definitely. I think it's a great thing. We were very, very excited when all the rumors were going around about the new flagship for the Canon. And when the new 1DX came out for the Canon, we were actually really disappointed because we were going to pre-order a couple of those bodies. But due to it falling short and only coming in below even the 1DS Mark four there, you know, it's kind of one of those, or sorry, 1DS Mark III. It was kind of one of those things that, you know, we were a little disappointed. Definitely if like a Nikon can come in a DSLR with, you know, 30 plus megapixels, that is amazing. As long as it's under $10,000.
Well, as long as the quality's good. I mean, it has to be, you know, more megapixels isn't any good if the quality of the pixels aren't there. But you know, I felt the same way about the new Canon, and I posted that on, I think, the Pro Photo Show page, and some people are like, oh, stop complaining about resolution. Resolution's not what matters. Well, resolution, you know, it isn't what matters in terms of the quality of the pixels is what counts. But if we're doing larger stuff, I mean, I really honestly was hoping that Canon would give us more, and I feel like they're just kind of inching the resolution up. And for the cost of this camera, I mean, yeah, the other specs are great, but come on, guys, I want more.
Definitely. I totally agree with that, because it's one of those things where, you know, when we're printing out a 40 or 60 inch wide print, we definitely like to have the resolution there.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, because until I started doing film, you know, I didn't realize how much we've downgraded in resolution in recent years. But in terms of those large prints, I mean, quite honestly, you get away with a bit more on canvas, but precluding that, I think I can see it at 36 inches and above. I really start to see those pixels. That doesn't mean you don't get a good print, but I really, you know, with a 12, 15, 20 megapixel camera, you start seeing that stuff when you get any kind of a sizable print. And particularly when you get up into the 50, 60, 70 inch kind of prints, things really start falling apart if you're at 18 or 20 megapixels.
Oh, definitely.
And yeah. Brady is also here. Brady, you haven't been on in a while, and it's good to have you. Brady Dillsworth over in, where are you at these days, Brady?
Rochester, New York.
And you're kind of, what are you working on? You're kind of focusing more on the commercial kind of side of things too as well, right? Wow, that was a long sentence.
I mean, I've been a wedding photographer for a very long time, and I'm not really enjoying it like I was. It's lost the excitement. So I've been spending the past year really focusing on creating a marketing campaign and a business plan and creating a portfolio to go out and do more editorial and commercial work, which I suspect I'm more appropriately geared for and I'm certainly more passionate about.
Sure, sure. Well, and on the note of commercial and resolution and stuff, what do you think about having this kind of resolution?
I mean, at this point, I wouldn't be in the market to acquire any new equipment just because I've made a pretty significant investment in outfitting a commercial studio and in pursuing this marketing. But when I'd certainly have no issue renting a camera like that for the appropriate jobs.
Sure, sure. And Dennis, back to you. I'm guessing from what you're saying in your kind of wedding and portrait market that you don't really see a need for what you do for the more resolution. Am I correct on that, or would you like to have the extra res?
Not so much for the resolution, but I've had the D7000 now since I think this past spring.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty crazy to think that that kind of, I call it like a, not really entry-level DSLR, it's probably a mid-level consumer, has the best video capabilities of any Nikon out there right now. I mean, so the video is actually more exciting to me to have a full-frame video sensor like that. And I'm hoping if they do their homework right, they'll really increase the sound capabilities or put in some nice options to be able to expand the sound.
Right.
But that's actually, I'm more excited about the video aspect of it, and also excited to see what else they can do as far as low light is concerned. Because even though it's been since, August of 2008 since I first picked up that D700, I am still amazed when I go into low light concerts and weddings. Still amazed. I mean, it's over 3 years later. I mean, come on. It still is amazing to see what that camera can do in low light.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's neat to see, but I probably wouldn't be the first in line, but I would probably be looking at it here as the D700 gets up there in shutter count and stuff like that, and with the video capabilities and low light, it might be time to cut the D300 loose.
Sure, sure. Well, and the beauty is if they do that. I mean, we're talking about the D800, but really it applies to all of them, because if they do, then Canon has to answer back, and all, you know, you got this cycle going on again. And if we jump ahead, 8 or 10 megapixels in resolution, there's always SRAW, I use my max resolution for pretty much everything, but there's always SRAW modes that we can use now. And that way, if you want to do something large, you have that resolution to work with. So providing the qualities there and the video there and the ISO and all that kind of stuff, it's a good thing, but we'll see how much they can cram in. I mean, more pixels you cram in, you tend to introduce more issues in terms of noise and stuff. So
exactly. We'll
see what happens going forward. And if the rumor is even true, but we might be talking about all this in vain, but let's move on from resolution. And the other thing, I guess the other thing I noticed in the news lately that got quite a bit of discussion was this letter that Scott Kilby wrote on his blog, because Adobe announced their new upgrades. And basically, very short order, I'll link this in the show notes, but essentially what it comes down to is they're limiting, how old a version you have to be able to upgrade to CS6 when it comes out. And effectively what it means is you're going to have to spend more or get a subscription, or if you don't have, I think it's CS5, you have to pay more to upgrade to CS6 when it comes out if you're trying to go from 4 to 6. And it kind of ticks people off. I mean, I think people are feeling like they're being fleeced a bit by Adobe, and I'm certainly not real thrilled with what they do. I mean, their service is admittedly in the toilet, I think most of us would feel, and I think they're struggling a little bit, and they're trying to compensate by having more updates and charging more for them more often. You're compensating, Adobe. They're going through that phase in their life when they go out and they buy a Corvette and they feel like, they need it. Anyway, what have you guys, anybody have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, my general thought on it, we've always upgraded our Photoshops, but from the past CS3 all the way up to the latest one, CS5, we really haven't maximized the use of the tools. That's my biggest thing. Like, we still stick with the basic tools, especially in my realm of work. And even more going forward now, I'm tending almost to back off with the amount of Photoshop work that we're doing. So, I don't know, there's a lot of photographers in the style that I work with that I'm still seeing and talking with them that they're still using like CS1 and CS2.
Sure.
So, I think that's where Adobe is trying to, get everybody up to where they're actually getting the CS6 now and get everybody up to the same platform so they can still keep building on it and still creating revenue for them.
By effectively, squeezing your customers, you're not winning any new fans, and you're not building the love there. I just think it's a bad business move. Brady, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I've got CS3 on my PCs and CS5 on my Macs, and a lot like Jonathan, I mean, I don't use even a fraction of what CS5 has. I don't even notice any difference between going from CS3 to CS5 if I edit on one system or the other. So, I mean, I personally don't really have the intention to keep upgrading, although I do for the new camera support. You can't make an old version of Photoshop work with the new cameras. So for that reason, I upgrade. But
well, if you have Lightroom, it has your camera support in Lightroom. So
yeah, I'm still trying to learn Lightroom.
Okay. Well, I have something coming up for you pretty soon that you're going to like then.
Okay.
Dennis, what do you think about this?
I think I'm muted. I haven't been following it too much. I did happen to glance and see Kelby's letter that he wrote. I did see that roll by, and I figured, you know, I've always had, you know, the tool is very useful. That's for sure. It's definitely a staple as far as how I make my living is using Photoshop and Lightroom. But it's one of those things where if they keep at it like that, yeah, they're just going to encourage other companies to build a better Photoshop, you know, with better customer service. And
which would be great. Yeah.
Which would be awesome. So I guess, you know, if they want to squeeze the customers, that's good, because in the end, the outcome is going to be more competition for us and somebody will, you know, build a better a better or different Photoshop, you know. And there's already a bunch of other companies that are doing that. It just needs to gain a little traction. And but yeah, customer service kind of stuff. I've always had nightmares. I'm guessing
now.
Most people have. Yeah,
it's awful. Well, and what's interesting about this? I mean, I've pretty much always had the latest version, and you know, I get to review this stuff, so I tend to have the latest version. And admittedly, I like CS5. I like CS4. I can't say that they're these huge upgrades, but what I'm getting from all of you guys is, you know, and I kind of see this myself. Is that, you know, yeah, there's some new features, but it's not that huge of a deal, and the essentials that I use every day are already there. So even at the current, even the way the current upgrade system is, I'm seeing guys, even active professionals like the people on this panel that haven't really been upgrading, you know, if they make it even a bigger, harder upgrade path, that's just going to discourage people even more from upgrading. I think it's just really, really stupid of them. And, you know, I mean, when Kelby starts writing about something like this, and it was a big enough deal that he wanted to voice his opinion, I mean, people really start looking. So everyone is, I shouldn't say everyone, a broad audience is aware of this now, and people are feeling frustrated with Adobe as it is. And, you know, coming back to the tools you use, I mean, quite honestly, as much as I enjoy the new tools and I always play with them and I do use them at times, you know, things like Content Aware Fill, which does work probably about, I don't know, 20% of the time. Yeah. I shouldn't say. I mean, they're tools. They're useful. It's good. You know, Photoshop's a great app. But honestly, same for me. I come back, what I do most of the time, Photoshop's essential for me. You know why? Most of the time because I'm burning and dodging. And Photoshop's burn and dodge tools are far more advanced than the ones in Lightroom. And I do, you know, a lot of burning and dodging to refine images and get tonal control. And I do, you know, pixel painting and stuff like that and work with details. Not that I don't use the other features. It's just that those are kind of my mainstays. And when I look at my usage patterns, that's what I focus on. And those are tools that not only are they in older versions of Photoshop, you can go out and get, you know, Photoshop Elements or another program entirely that will do that.
Right.
I welcome people's thoughts. I mean, there'll be a forum thread for this show. So head over there and we'll talk about it more. Give your opinions, give your thoughts, and we'll just see what happens. But any other news-related, industry-related news topics that I haven't brought up that anybody wants to throw out there now?
For one of the most recent news that a lot of my colleagues have been talking about is the new cinematic camera from Canon.
Oh, yeah, that's and right. Gosh. Go ahead.
Everybody's really waiting to get their hands on it because it's, you know, very much a competition with the Red One system. So they're all dying to get their hands on it, test it out. But they're also all complaining right now about the cost of the lenses for it.
Are they high? This is the C300, correct?
It's the C300. Yeah, the lenses range all the way from a beginner style lens at a couple thousand dollars all the way up to $40,000, I think, is for the biggest lens kit. So it's fairly expensive. It's almost intangible, especially with, you know, the new 1DX there, which uses all the L series as well as the regular series lenses. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm waiting to see what the difference is, especially with one of our companies that does a lot of video. They're very interested in it. So
excellent. Well, and admittedly, you know, I saw the short film that Vincent LaFerre did, and, you know, this is a camera that's geared to video instead of geared to stills that also has video. But at the same time, I don't think this is going to be that mainstream because, you know, yeah, I mean, I've been doing more with video and doing promo videos and, you know, rolling footage on some different things and been expanding a bit more into that. But this is for somebody who's really focused on video. I mean, does anybody on this panel, as cool as this looks, is this something that you might actually use at that cost? I mean, what's it, $20,000 or something like that?
Yeah, for what my work is, we have a sister company that takes care of all our video side.
Right.
So, you know, as myself, light imaging, we're definitely not interested in it. So it's, you know, it's a, we'd rather put the money into getting a 60 megapixel camera back or an 80 megapixel camera back. Because when the company's hiring myself, it's to go straight in and get good stills, not necessarily stills and video and this and that.
Right, right. Well, and I think that also the lineup we have now of both Canon and the Nikon and other brands of DSLRs are producing such beautiful, stunning video that it's for most of us, it's a non-issue. I mean, we have the camera and all these lenses existing. This is a cinema camera, and so they're targeting clearly at that. They're targeting, you know, look at the clip that Lefray made. I mean, it's a cinema quality production, and that's who this is geared towards.
Oh, definitely. There's a market for it, and there is a need for it. It's just a matter of how many will actually get produced and out there in the market.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing where if you need it, you know you need it. You're not going to be sitting at home saying, wow, that would be really cool to have. I'm going to go and spend $60,000 for a camera and lens setup. You know, the people who are going to use it to its capacity, they know that it's for them. And the rest of us, well, the 5D Mark II or the D3S are, you know, perfectly adequate.
Right, right. Okay, very cool. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. It's interesting. It's out of most of our price range, I think, or practicality for most of us. But it will be interesting to see where they go with that. And it's a pretty interesting looking setup because video is an interesting area to delve into, even with our current lineup of gear. Anybody else? Any news bits you want to throw out there?
Good to go.
Okay. Well, before we continue, a quick little sponsor advertisement. This show is brought to you by Cyme Effects. And check out the best in Lightroom aperture presets, actions, editing, and training over at cymeeffects.com. And the new Silver Shadows 2, which is an all-in-one toolkit for black and white in Lightroom. And it's been really well received. We just came out last month with this product, and it's doing really well, and people are really loving it. It really is a black and white system without leaving Lightroom that you can do inside there and get that quality and the subtlety and the nuances of your black and white. So check that out over at cymeeffects.com. Also, keep an eye over there this month, Lightroom Ninja. The new Lightroom Ninja video workshop series. This is going to be a series of Lightroom workshops, taking it all the way from the beginning and fully downloadable HD workshops for Lightroom, and they're going to be really reasonable. They're not out yet, so I don't have the exact details, but they are coming very, very soon, before the end of the year, over on cymeeffects.com. So check that out, and that's my little ad. So let's move on to some other topics and maybe swing into a few lightning rounds here on the Christmas episode. Bring some lightning cheer.
Like, it sounds so friendly and hot.
Let's see. Let's talk about Christmas lights. Oh, I mean light. Well, you might be able to light with Christmas lights. That could be a topic. Let's do a lightning round, though. For those of you that are new to the lightning rounds, Dennis, of course, you know the lightning round. Who wants to time? Dennis, you want me to time, or do you want to time for us?
I can gladly time
you
for
time
us.
You time, because then I don't go over.
And what is it? 8 minutes?
We vary it. We vary it by each one. But
okay, you just let me know what my unit is, and I'll set it up.
Give me a couple of test runs on your buzzer. Let's see how that sounds.
Well, it's just going to be me going, eh.
That's good. It sounds a little bit like you're choking, maybe a little bit.
Okay,
more.
How about like, what, am I over a question mark buzzer? Like, eh?
Okay, I like that. Yeah, that's all good. Right. Okay. Brady.
You like that? Okay, we'll go.
It's fun. You know what? Mix it up. It's Christmas. Okay. So you
all
can,
right, I'll mix it up.
Yeah, you can do some Christmassy ones, all kinds of things. And
okay, we'll, all right.
Brady and John, you're not familiar with the lightning rounds. What we do is we come up with a topic, and you're welcome to suggest one. We got the chat room going over here. And we just take like a one-liner topic, and everybody has 1, 2, 3 minutes to quickly kind of shout out their views and ideas and share some thoughts on it. We go through the group, and then we take a couple minutes just to kind of recap and any quick rebuttals people have. And typically the way it works is the person that suggests the topic goes last and lets everybody else, they suggest a topic, everybody else throws it out there, and then they wrap it up, and then there's a little recap time. So, got it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, let's first of all talk about light. And I know this is a pretty broad topic, but I want to talk do a lightning round where each of us kind of give our own little thoughts and ideas that we've been working with lately on types of light, dealing with light, making light sing, molding light. I know all of us work with light and are experimenting with it in various different ways. So let's just throw some random stuff out there, different tools we're using or different situations we've been in recently and ideas we have. We'll give each other, light's such a great topic. We'll give everybody 3 minutes on this one and each to kind of talk about their own ideas on light. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Let's do a lightning round on light, which is ironic because lightning produces light. So that could be a type of light. Have you ever lit a wedding with lightning, Dennis? Sorry. Am I doing it again?
Not the whole wedding. Okay. A few pictures, but not the whole thing. That you'd have to have a lot of patience and a lot of unsettled weather. But right. 3 minutes. Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. So who wants to go first? Okay, Jonathan, thank you.
Sounds good.
So, Dennis, you tell him when to go since you're running the timer, and Jonathan's got 3 minutes. Just give us some good stuff about light.
Lightning round starts now.
Sounds good. So one of the biggest things that I find with light right now is that we're using a lot of different mixed sources. We've developed, I've developed a couple small kits now that fit in a small suitcase. So we have a bunch of portable flashes like 580 EXs and EX2s. So we have 4 or 5 of those that we carry around, as well as we have some small Elenchrome Quadras. Now they're not like super high powered lights. Everything's under 400 watt seconds or less, but the stuff that you can do with mixing the natural light, the daylight, the surrounding lights with those, you can get some really nice and interesting effects. And more often than not, I prefer those to where we have complete control of the light. I'm finding a lot of times lately that too much light is actually a hindrance to a lot of our shots. So what we're doing is using smaller lights, smaller amount of lights, and then that way we can get a really nice background blur with using a limited depth of field. For some other new light sources that we are going to be playing with lately is using a lot of things like Kino flows, stuff that's actually continuous light. So again, you don't have to go super expensive getting, pro photo strobes or anything like that. You can even use like fluorescent banks, like the flicker free fluorescent banks, or even just tungsten lights, and produce some really amazing effects. A lot of the commercial photographers are doing that now. And that's about it that I have for light right now.
That all? Okay. Well, you cleared in ahead of time, didn't you, Dennis?
Yes, he did. He's good.
Okay, great. And Brady, actually, Dennis actually should be starting this off since he's got the timer.
Lightning round starts now.
I really love good light. I mean, I think that's the number one most important part about taking a photograph. Emotion and content is number two, but it has to be well lit. And I'm a Dynalite guy. I've got a bunch of M1000 wireless packs and a half dozen or 8 or 10 20/40 and 40/40 heads. And basically, it's just studio equipment. And, it's fun to work with and it's effective. But what I've really been enjoying is shooting with just a single or two lights and using scrims and reflectors and diffusers and black cards to really shape that light. So I've been opting for medium or small sources, 16 by 20 up to 20 by 30 softboxes, and learning how to and mastering how to really make that light complement the subject. In addition to that, though, I'm really fascinated by great natural light. One of my favorite things is just to go out with a fast lens, like an 85 1.4, and just shoot on the street or just, find somebody and bring them out with me for a couple hours and explore everything. And, I really find that that's something that gets me excited about photography. A lot of the equipment, though, is expensive if you go the commercial route. But, check out strobus.com, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
And, David Hobby has a million great ideas for getting your feet wet without, going crazy, spending a fortune on it. And that's about all I've got for light, so I'll yield the rest of my time to Gavin and Dennis.
To the congressman from Minnesota.
Wow, Dennis, I'm going to have like 10 minutes because everybody else has extra, right?
No, you don't get all the extra. It just kind of gets put into a reserve for future roundtables is what I hear. Okay. We got to figure these rules out ahead of time, but I think I know it doesn't go to you. I know that. Well, no, because you get your own shows every once in a while. So you just, how about that?
That's
all the
true. That's
up
true.
Time becomes a solo podcast.
I get a solo show. So it's Dennis, let's go ahead and have you talk, and then we'll get Barry Howland here, who's just joining the conversation. Hello, Barry. Good to have you. And Barry Howell just went away, but we'll come right back to him. And Dennis, all go right. ahead with your 3 minutes. Let's give us some ideas about light. Lightning round starts now.
Is that what I sound? Okay, we're good. Yeah, to kind of echo what Brady and Jonathan said, especially with Brady with using the natural light, it's when you get into your career and you keep going and you start making money from your photos, it's easy to become bogged down with tons and tons of gear, like a trunk full of gear. Reflectors and strobes and speed lights, it's so easy to just want to light the thing like you're doing a microscopic photo of a cell or something. Follow me. But the part that I enjoy and what Brady was saying is that just going out and just seeing, okay, what is the bare minimum I can do with this? Like, use a natural light and just use natural reflectors, whether it be like a sidewalk, you know, just to give you that little bit of a bounce under the eyes, or use like a white fence or something. You know, using that is almost more satisfying to me than walking out to a scene and having a whole, you know, huge array of strobes. It's just kind of see what you can get by with naturally. I recently had an in-home engagement session, because it's, you know, pretty much winter here, and they wanted to do some stuff where their faces weren't bright red. So I packed up the car and had everything loaded to fully intending to set up studio basically inside their home. And I'm thinking out, like, you know, light situations, light scenarios. And I get there and I notice that it's a beautiful home, and they've got one whole side of the house is all windows, nice available light coming in, no harsh light at all, just beautiful. So I left everything in the car and just grabbed a couple, you know, 2 and 3 foot reflectors and a couple of stands to hold those, and just worked with the natural surroundings, and they loved them and they turned out great. You know, instead of the same old, you know, boring canvas backgrounds, we actually used their beautiful house just by using what Perfect. They had and tweaking it from there. That's about all I got for light.
Good stuff, Dennis. Yeah, I love it.
41 seconds to go, and I will yield it to the man himself, Barry.
I am here. How are you guys?
We're doing really good. We're hoping you'll bring us some Christmas cheer. You are a little hot on the mic, so back off a little bit because you're distorting a bit, and we'll hear those dulcet Barry tones coming through loud and clear.
I would never distort you, Gavin.
Aw.
Barry, you are like a space distortion field of light right in there all on your own. And that's great because we are talking about light right here in this lightning round, and you are up. Everybody, Barry Howe, you know who he is. Welcome. Barry was running a little bit late today. He was probably out making money while we were here talking. And Barry, our lightning round we're in right now is just the topic of light, just kind of some tips and ideas, different ways that you've been working with light lately, and things just kind of all over the map. So you got 3 minutes to just talk about light, and Dennis has got the timer, thankfully for our listeners, and I'm speaking about me, not you. I didn't mean that in a negative way. Dennis will let you know when to go. Sorry, I'm eating crow here.
Barry, your 3 minutes starts now.
Go. Ready, set. Well, I tell you what, light is the one thing that I always feel like I can control no matter what. And sometimes I have very little that I have to do, and sometimes I have to do a lot. I'm going to be doing a shoot at 10 o'clock tonight inside a hockey rink of 4 kids all geared up in their hockey deal for a family for a wall portrait. And I am faced with the dilemma of how in the world am I going to make that portrait look stunning based on the fact that I know how much lighting gear do I need to bring in. What I always try to look at is if there's natural light in play, then I always want to use as much natural light as I can. But a lot of natural light can often, you know, need a little supplement, whether it's a little reflector here, a little fill flash, a little this, a little that. And the biggest thing that I always try and do when I'm trying to supplement natural light is to at least follow the general direction that the natural light is giving me. And I see time and time again, I see people that try and fight the natural direction of light and light it so harshly from the opposite direction, or from just, it just doesn't make any sense intellectually, and your brain just kind of doesn't make any sense out of the image. So if I'm in a home and I'm doing a family portrait and there's a lot of natural light, you know, coming through the windows, you know, and I have the light's coming at a 45-degree angle, well, if I'm going to have to supplement with some additional light, A, I'm going to color balance it so that I'm not fighting the natural tones of that light, but I'm going to generally supplement that light from the same general direction that the natural light's coming from, so you have a beautiful, very natural-looking kind of thing. And location-wise, I'm kind of, I find myself, the more sophisticated the TTL systems get with all of the, and Nikon's remote system is amazing if you want to use the whole ITTTL thing off camera, multiple flashes, they can do and yield amazing results. For me, however, most of the time, I strongly prefer to leave my flashes on manual. I run with remote triggers. That's probably what I'll be doing tonight in that hockey rink with probably three flashes, all shooting on manual, so I can absolutely control and never have to worry about the automation kind of coming up a little short. At the end of the day, all I care about is, does the light help tell that story? And sometimes that is told with direct light. I do a lot of backlighting with my flashes outdoors. And again, I don't try and make it look fakey backlight. It's more of, if the sun isn't totally there to rim out or give me some beautiful hair light, maybe a simple flash with somebody holding it up on a monopod with a warm gel over the front of the flash will give me the effect I'm looking for.
Time!
That's it.
All right. Good stuff, Barry. Thank you. Thank you so much. And you slid right into that lightning round once we got your audio in there. I guess that makes it my turn, huh?
Oh, yeah. Let me set this timer. Hold on.
You're a little hot on the mic, Dennis. Back off just a touch.
That's what they tell me. Mr. Gavin Syme, with the beard and all, your time starts now.
All right. Light for me has been huge this year. I've done so much with light, and I'm super excited about it, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it. But zone system has been huge for me. We need the zone system for digital. It's not negated. You know, maybe you don't need all the systems in terms of following it for how you develop film and stuff like that, because we're not using film. But I feel like that the zone system gets hugely overlooked, and I've spent a lot of time talking with Barry and stuff about this. But in any case, there is an article I did on my my journal, F164.com, called Why You Need the Zone System for Digital. And I went very in-depth. I spent a lot of time on this, researching everything from, you know, how your meters work to the different situations. But zones and using zones, what they've done for me in short order, because I don't have time in 3 minutes to describe the zone system, what it's done is I see light. I no longer go out and wonder, what am I going to get? We've all been there where we're in a situation and you get a photo and everything sings and it looks great and you're like, wow, what did I do right? And once you start understanding the simple concepts of using zones and seeing light, you look around and you see the light. And it kind of comes back to what Barry and really the rest of us are talking about. I love what I'm hearing, because it's not about like just plastering light. It's about seeing the natural light, accenting lights, sculpting with light, and really getting that light out there. And these are things I think we need to be doing to stand out. I mean, it's a tough business these days. It's a competitive market, and we need to be making as good a stuff as we can. In terms of things I'm doing with it, Radio Popper Juniors, I got a set of those, and I know we're not to our picks yet, but those are really cool. I've actually ditched because they got stolen. So I bought the Radio Popper Junior instead. I had the Radio Popper PX, which are a full ETTL system. Well, the Juniors are fully manual, but the little perk is you put one on the camera and one on your flashes, and they actually have little dials that control the power right there on the hot shoe on this little gadget. So yes, it's manual, but you can do, you know, different flash powers on different units, and there's none of this horrible, like, get into the menu and like, oh, I need to change the power on the flash, I'll be back in 5 minutes. I mean, you just literally turn this little dial on your hot shoe. There's three little knobs on there. So that's been really cool. And for when I do need to augment with some artificial light to, you know, to control my zones and my tone values. And another thing is really trying to get away from flat light. I mean, I see this in portraiture so much, and I'm trying to get away from that in my work and really think about how we're sculpting light. Again, kind of coming back to what Barry said about seeing the light that's there, I want to be able to sculpt that light and work with it. You know, it's important in making people look attractive. I want to see light. LEDs is another big thing, and we'll talk about those in the pics. I got a cool LED that I've come across, but I've been trying to loving speed lights and things like that still, but looking at some alternative methods. Really interested in where LEDs are going and the potential of that for video and for stills and portraiture and things like that. But bottom line, I really am working to see light in a more refined way and to be able to sculpt it exactly the way I want. And it comes back to the zones for me. They make it work. So that's all for me.
Time.
All right. I had to see that in time this time. Let's just take 2 minutes. And Dennis, you can kind of monitor us and not let us go over. But after all these discussions, any other thoughts? I mean, this isn't really a debate, so I doubt we have any rebuttals, but anything you guys want to add to all this stuff?
Yeah, one thing that I'd like to add is a lot of the times lately I've been using external light sources and non-natural light to control my tonal range in my photos, where the shadows are just a little bit dark for me. We just kick in a huge, either like a 8-foot or 6-foot umbrella,
right,
just to fill in very, very subtly. So like the light is not overpowering the scene. So it's more about controlling the tonal range of the technology that we have today. So that way we can record as much information as we can and then tone it back if we have to.
Right. Agreed. And I think tonal range, I love it that you say tonal range, and I know that you're working with a lot of this kind of stuff in your commercial and your portrait work, but it's something that is thought about so little today, is just the managing of tone values. You know, we go out and we take photos, and it's kind of like this mindset throughout the industry of either it looks good or it doesn't. Instead of what are the tones, what do I want the tones to be, how can I manipulate the tones, and whether it be flash or natural light or whatever it is you're doing, because I see so many photos, particularly portraits, that are just like super flat, plain light. Well, first of all, flat light on a girl's face makes her look fat. So that's something to be aware of. And most women don't like that. But just on a practical note of photographs, people say, oh, well, in fashion photography, they're using flat light. Sometimes I shake my head at what they do in the fashion world. I think we've probably all been there. But you also got to remember that in a world of fashion, they're not selling, you know, a portrait. They're selling clothing or whatever it is they're modeling. I think that's something in terms of the portrait side. Barry, any other thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, and I've talked about it before, you know, a few years back, I converted my in-studio lighting to all constant lights.
Right.
And I really, really like working with them. And I find that I'm using my studio lighting more effectively and mirroring more closely probably what I do when I'm working outdoors with natural light, because now I'm controlling my depth of field far more than ever before, because I can shape the light and I can just, it's like, it just is a really, it was a liberating thing to get away from power heads and strobes and flashes that don't fire at the perfect moment and, you know, flashes that go off and cause people to blink and $60 flash tubes and, you know,
right.
$40 modeling lamp burnout. It's been terrific. And so I'm a big, big fan of the constant lights. This winter, I'd like to work with some different light modifiers and try some different things, because I've been primarily working with just soft boxes, reflectors, and, you know, a few accent lights and hair lights, but I'd kind of like to expand that a little more.
So they're really allowing you is to visualize better. I mean, because they're on all the time, you're seeing the light, even though
Correct.
You knew how to work with the other lights just fine, you're seeing it and you're manipulating it in ways that you weren't doing before.
Absolutely. And I, you know, so now when I look at a portrait, and if I mean, I could do a 3-to-1 lighting ratio in my sleep with any set of strobes anybody wanted to give me. But now I can sort of see that 3 or 3.5 or 4-to-1 ratio and just watch it kind of come to life and, you know, have enough experience behind the camera to be able to know a back to tonal range. And I know just how far I can push those shadows to not become annoying. And at times I want the dramatic shadow and I want that strong, you know, 5 or 6-to-1 lighting ratio just
sure.
coming in from the side.
That's great. Yeah.
So cool. I really like the constant lights.
Well, we're going to have our picks of the season coming up here soon. So maybe you can dig up a couple of recommendations for what some gadgets people can get in the constant lighting territory. Dennis, any closing thoughts on this lighting topic?
I don't. Everything has been said is very a ton of information and very helpful. So everything, anything I would say would just be repeating it. So,
gotcha.
Sounds, I think good.
Good stuff, Dennis. Brady, you have anything else for us?
Just that I've been really paying a lot of attention to some great classic photo books, especially a couple by Josef Karsh, and it's just a really interesting way to see. You know, the way one of the best photographers ever looked at lighting really iconic people. So I've been drawing a lot of inspiration from him and a couple of other people's works.
Great. Maybe you can give us a couple recommendations in the picks. That sounds like those would be great, great gift ideas.
Sure.
Sounds good. Okay, well, let's wrap. Anybody have another lightning round they want to do? We probably got time for one more, and then we'll go into our picks and kind of start winding down here for the day. Let's get some cups of hot cocoa brewing over there, and then we'll jump right into this. Anybody have a thought on a lightning round?
I mean, it's always a good idea to talk about just business and sales and marketing. That's particularly important right now with
the market,
you know, the way
it is.
Yeah, sure.
Well, no, and that's a good idea. I'm glad you bring that up, and it's good to condense those topics into lightning rounds, because otherwise I talk for like 3 hours about them. So we will do that, and I guess we'll just kind of business and marketing ideas for 2012. You know, people thinking about what they want to do, or maybe just throwing some ideas around and thinking about how we might innovate and try to be positive coming into the new year. And, you know, it's been a little tough out there. I think this has been a tough year for a lot of photographers, but I think that things will continue to change and we can adapt. So let's do that. And Dennis, you can time again, if you will. And let's start with a new guy. We'll go again with you, John. And what do you think? Dennis, whenever you're ready, give him the go ahead.
All right, go ahead. You're on.
Sounds good. So one of the most recent things that I've been hearing a lot about is using self-directed projects to generate interest within all of your commercial clients or other clients. And my self-directed project has actually already, even though it's only 2 months old, has already generated a large commercial client for myself. So that is probably one of my most effective marketing tools right now. And, you know, I've also just listened recently to a video presentation from a couple other top photographers saying definitely always keep doing, you know, personal work, because if you keep doing what you love, you'll actually garner clients that appreciate what you're doing, and then you'll just slowly tumble into always doing what you love, and people will pay you for it. The other good marketing tools that we're using right now is Agency Access and AdBase. Definitely something for any commercial photographer or any photographer looking to get into those types of realms within that genre, because it's got wonderful tools, full service support, and you can use it and utilize it all through all your email campaigns, your telemarketing campaigns, and, you know, it also helps you sculpt. They actually have a consultant that will actually work with you to develop your portfolio and just kind of specialize with what you need to do, but at the same time keeping true to what you are. So with, you know, doing email marketing and all those other types of marketing, and then going through and doing your self-directed projects, you can hopefully drum up some great business and keep working. And that's about it.
Excellent. Jonathan, what's the URL of your personal project? Because I checked that out, and there's some really great stuff you're doing there with environmental portraits.
Yeah, so my URL is fortheloveofit.ca. So it's just www.fortheloveofit.ca.
Great stuff. Yeah, no, you got some neat stuff on there that you've been doing, and I love that you've been kind of coming back to your light topic of working with light in the camera and really sculpting and getting some beautiful portraits. So
definitely, thank you.
And let's go to Barry. Dennis, whenever you're ready.
Dennis, am I ready?
Tough. Sorry. I was muted.
He was getting cocoa.
Yeah, that's it. Cocoa.
And chestnuts.
All right. And chestnuts. And go, Barry.
Oh, very nice. Well, as I look ahead to 2012, which for me is 2013 when I think of the high school senior segment of our business, which is kind of what the whole thing revolves around, I am more determined than ever to try and figure out a way to promote and educate the next class of seniors that will be coming through, the, you know, thousands that are in this general market area, that studio portraits are a really important component of seniors, of their senior experience. The vast majority of the photographers that I compete with in this trade area right now don't have studios. Thus, they promote one thing and one thing only, environmental portraits, if they're even that official. Most of them are just natural light photographers, wink, wink. And they love, you know, they wander around all the parks and rivers and lakes and they snap a zillion pictures. But time and time, the positive feedback we get off the studio side of the work, and we do all of that same outdoor stuff for kids and for the families, but it's convincing, and that's really a challenge for me, is to figure out how to really get that message into the heads of the kids that this is a really important piece. And if you don't, if you hire a photographer that only takes you downtown or only takes you to the river, you're going to maybe get some great shots, no question about it, but that's an important piece. So I'm kind of thinking about that, and I'm just coming off right now. I'm in the process of a Living Social deal that I'm doing, which is similar to Groupon, which is a heavily discounted thing where they do all the heavy lifting, and I'm getting reasonable feedback. I've had several people take advantage of the deal. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm working on it, and the key will be how to upsell the customers. I'm not wild about deeply discounting what we do. It kind of goes against my grain, but this is a tough market in a tough town with a lot of photographers. So if this can expand my client base a little and get me a few thousand dollars of sales I wouldn't have otherwise gotten, well, I guess I have to do it. So I guess it's reinvention time for everybody and all of us. And sooner or later, maybe it'll all turn around and we'll be saying, wow, this was a great year. Done.
Dennis, why don't you go ahead and give us a couple minutes and share some ideas?
Sure. I'll begin myself here. Okay. And rolling. Marketing for 2012. I guess I will stick to what has gotten me so far, kept me busy this year, which has been still marketing on Facebook. And it has really paid off, you know, however many years we've been doing this whole Facebook thing. I think probably 3 years now since Scott and Adina came on and really pushed that home on the one Christmas episode. But looking back at 2011, a majority of my business did come from direct connections with existing clients and past clients on Facebook. You know, just from seeing pictures that go up, whether it be on my personal page or the DZ Photography page, it just always, you know, keeping in the client's mind, you know, kind of at the forefront of their mind so that they don't forget about you. That's one thing. So I'm going to keep going with that. I'll be doing another Facebook wedding kind of recap like I did last year, a little contest I did, which had great results. I'll be doing that in January, and that too should build up excitement and interest in that side of the business. And I'm also doing, I didn't do any wedding shows this year, but I'll be doing one next early in January. I'll be doing that again. So I will be very interested to see how what the perception is of brides walking in the door, because it's been probably 2 years, you know, since 2010. So last year I did a last wedding show. So it'll be interesting to see what the attitude is towards you know, professionals and what they expect for their money. So I'm looking forward to that. But like Barry said, it's all about reinventing and seeing what you can do differently, how you can set yourself apart. And I do believe, I echo what he said too about the having the studio background, because that is something that not everybody can do, and not everybody can do well. So to be able to advertise yourself and your abilities in that field, I think will be huge. And I will yield the floor.
All right. Thank you, sir. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to that Facebook stuff. You got some good stuff going there. I will go ahead, and you can let me know when you're starting.
Kevin Syme, your time starts now.
All right. So first of all, I won't hold myself up as some kind of lord of marketing, because honestly, I have been doing probably less sessions this year than I have in years. I've been focusing on what I want to do and trying to expand and experiment really with my marketing, because I've been keeping busy with Syme Effects and Pro Photo Show and workshops and things like that. And I have my new studio here, but I've been focusing on what I want to do, which is more environmental family portraits and individual portraits, but not in the sense, you know, coming back to Barry's topic, not just running around taking tons of photos, but slowing down and making really refined pieces for the wall. In fact, one of my best sales of a senior portrait this year was a 40-inch canvas for their wall, and it was done on 4x5 film. And that was really exciting to kind of validate the 4x5 film thing. But bottom line is, for me, I think that we need to analyze ways we can stand out. There's zillions of photos being made, and I think we need to bridge that divide between a piece of art and a snapshot, because there is a difference. Both are good. There's nothing wrong with making snapshots, but I think as a professional, we need to look at ways that we can try and widen that gap so that people see that value. For me, that's been the wall portraits, and I'm growing in that area, and that's where my focus has been, and I'm taking my time because I can, and I'm trying to experiment and just forge forward in that area. And the jobs that I have been doing are higher sales than I've ever had, you know, in previous years before I started doing those. So it's working. It's just taking time, and I'm trying to take my time and do it the way I want. And also, I've been spending increasingly more time on trying to build my pictorials and sell pieces of those, which it is gradually starting to ramp, but it's a slow process. It's hard to sell art for the walls. So I don't have any genius tips on doing that. But again, coming back to the same thing, I've been trying to make really refined stuff, you know, on my F-164 blog, where I post my pictorials. I don't go out and go to the Grand Canyon and then post 50 photos from my photo walk that morning. I go out and I make a photo and I post it, and then I'll release that as a piece. So you can check that out over there if you want to see more about that, and we'll talk about it more in the future. But I think we need to refine. If you're just starting out, don't quit the day job. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but enjoy the photography. It takes time. Understand it's not an easy business. It's not generally reality that you just run out and go and you jump into this business, particularly not these days. Enjoy it. Learn the craft and work with it and have fun with it and enjoy that learning experience so that you can really find ways that work for you to build a style and raise your bar and really put some beautiful stuff out there for people. So that's my thoughts.
Oh, nice.
Right in under the wire. And who do we have left? Dennis, go ahead and give the shout out to Brady whenever you're ready.
Brady, you're on.
All right, sounds good. So the recession is really good for doing two things. And the first thing is that it really forces us all to get creative and figure out what we want to do and how we're going to do it. So I think this has actually been a pretty good time in that it's taken us from being in a pretty comfortable, complacent state to now really having to figure out what comes next. And so with that said, whether or not you've increased your revenue over the past couple of years, it's really critical that you look at the efficiency of your business and find out where the waste is, both the human resources for the weekend. Then come on down. And I don't know who that was, but that was kind of funny.
So what do you? What is that?
It sounds like a commercial or something. I hope you're getting paid for that. So,
sorry, Brady. Continue.
The floor will grant. Will give Brady 10 extra seconds because of the advertisement. You're on.
Sounds good. I also want half of what you just collected for that. So, you know, you need to figure out where the waste exists right now. You know, where are you spending too much money? What's not yielding the return that it used to? And either make them more efficient or cut them overall. Because, you know, it's safe to assume that you probably don't have, you know, the capital to invest that you did a couple of years ago. And so you really want to make sure that what you're spending is giving you the most back that you can. And the other component is that when things get tight, most people have more free time than they have money. And so you want to make sure that the time you're putting into your business is producing cash returns. So that's the first big point here. The second is that as I've been entering the commercial and editorial markets, I've really come to realize how critical it is to register our copyrights with copyright.gov. And, you know, there are a couple of reasons for doing it, but the biggest one is that your work will get infringed. And if you have not registered that copyright, you're not really going to be able to collect much in the way of damages, just actual provable losses, and usually legal fees will be more than that. But if you have registered that copyright and the person infringes it, you know, you can go after the profits that the individual made. You can go after legal fees, and you can possibly collect statutory damages as well. So there's a tremendous advantage to registering that work. And I'll send Gavin the links to some articles on how and why you do it and what it costs. But essentially, everything that you shoot that's going on your blog and Facebook, etc., needs to be registered to protect you and to ensure that you have the means to keep doing the work. You know, you don't want to be tied up suing somebody over, you know, some picture that was used, and when all said and done, you're not going to get anything back. And the last thing I want to talk about is a little bit of marketing. And this is just really basic stuff, but when times are tough and you don't have the resources to spend money on marketing like you otherwise would, it comes down to just building and maintaining relationships. And with Christmas just around the corner, what I'd suggest everybody do is go and look at your top 10 or top 20 or top 30 clients and send them something value added. You know, maybe if you're in the commercial or editorial space, send a couple of the art directors or a couple of the editors you loved working with some free prints that are just art for the walls. You know, Gavin, you're doing all these series across the country. Well, maybe a couple, a dozen 8x10 sent out to the right people could really get that work noticed. So that's not going to cost more than a couple $100, and it generates a lot of goodwill.
I have what's called a content aware timer. So if the content is good, it doesn't go off. So we got a little Brady bonus time there.
No,
so
that was good stuff, Brady.
I was over my limit there.
Not on this timer. Like I said, content aware timer. Plus, you got a radio ad in there too.
I just want to add one correction to that, Brady. I don't send 8x10s. I send like 20x30s.
I think that's even better.
but okay, let's take 2 or 3 minutes and just kind of recap. I mean, some good topics have been thrown out. What is people? First of all, to reiterate, I think the copyright thing, Brady's good. And I'll look. Please do send me those links because it's really confusing for a lot of people. I don't do it as much as I should, but I have been doing it annually at least, where I go through and take the images that have been published and really floating around out there, and I register them as a batch, and it costs like $30 or something like that.
Let me jump in here for one quick second. I've taken two copyright workshops in the past month.
Cool.
And one really, really important element is that you need to register published and unpublished work separately.
Right.
But the second thing is that you have, I think it's a 30-day grace period. It might be more. It might be 60 or 90 days, but I'm not 100% sure on that. You have a grace period after when the image is produced and first published to when it has to be registered for protection. And so the suggestion that is floating around in the commercial editorial space is if you register the published works once a month, the work is always then protected. And so if somebody infringes on it before you registered it, as long as you're within that registration grace period,
right,
you still have full protection. Now, if you wait a year and somebody takes one of those photographs 6 months ago, you're out of luck. You're not going to have the copyright protection when you go to sue that person.
Now, I was under the impression that the grace period of even registering the copyright at all was like 60 days from the notice of infraction, from when you discovered the theft. Is that not the case?
No, I'm almost certain that's not the case. And Jonathan might know a little more about this, but I can almost guarantee you that the grace period is from the date of first publication, and it might even be date of capture, but I'll have to look that up and send you the notes.
But Jonathan, do you have anything to add to the copyright side of this stuff? Have you dealt with this much?
Yeah, with the copyright, it's just very important that you actually always register, especially your published work.
This has always been a contention, a struggle for me, is published versus unpublished, and I've even called the copyright office about it, and I get hemmed and hawed around. And is posting to your blog published or not? I mean, even when I talk to their people, they're like, well, it's kind of published. Basically, it comes down to, like, you decide when it's published.
Okay. Let me let Jonathan finish before I jump in. I'm sorry,
I just
Jonathan.
Had to mention that.
So no worries. Yeah, so my basic rule is anytime one of my commercial clients, we sell them rights and usage to a photo, mm-hmm. we register that copyright right away. The reason being is because if they go over their rights and usage, we have fallbacks. We have a legal standing that we can actually go back to them. The other thing is a lot of times clients now are looking for unlimited usage for their photos, which, you know, sometimes we do grant, sometimes we don't, but it's for that specific company. So if we give somebody unlimited usage but never register it, and then their sister company takes it, then we have no standings to actually go after their other company, even though we've granted the one company unlimited usage. Ah. So it's very important that as soon as you send a rights and usage document, or even a editorial gets published, or you know, you put it up on your blog with future sales possible, to definitely register that copyright.
Excellent.
Okay, so one note about published, and keep in mind, I'm going off the top of my head here, but I'll make sure Gavin gets very clear notes on this. From both of the workshops that I took, it was made very clear that if you take the images and post them on a blog, on a website, on social networking, in a gallery, or even if you provide, let's say hypothetically, you're shooting public relations and you provide the client with all of the photographs that they then distribute through their channels, all of that is considered published works.
Gotcha.
Now, one important note here is that after you have made a registration, if that registration was made as published work, if you have to litigate about that in the future and it turns out technically that work was unpublished, you can amend a published registration to be unpublished. However, you cannot amend something that was originally registered as unpublished to being published. So it's better to err on the side of safety here and register the work that has been accessible publicly as published work, just for the fact that it can be amended.
Okay, and that's what I've been doing now. So then, to give a scenario, I mean, let's say you got somebody that's not maybe doing actively commercial work, but they want to stay protected. You could take the approach of, hey, I'm looking at all the things I've posted to my blog and my Facebook. I'm going to dump all those together and get those sent in to register those and as published works now, and you could kind of build yourself a little system around that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what I suggest doing is putting a copyright step right in your archiving step. So, you know, shoot the photos, download the photos, choose your selects, process the selects. Then at that point, when you're prepared to archive the work, I would duplicate those files into another folder, which is going to be your monthly copyright folder. And, you know, at the end of the month, you send that disc in or you do the online registration of all the work you've shot then. That way, nothing slips through the cracks.
Right, right. No, that's good. And the struggle for me, and you just have to deal with it, but unless this has changed recently, in the past, an unpublished work, you could use their Echo system, which is their online registration system, and just upload everything. With published stuff, you can still do a batch all in one under one registration fee, but you have to actually make a disc and mail it in and fill out the form. And I have no idea why. You know, I guess it's government efficiency, but it works a little differently. I don't know if you've experienced that yet or not.
Yeah,
but
they are aware of that discrepancy, and it is being worked on. In fact, there is an invitation only. I think it's invitation only test to use the new version that will allow you to upload a number of published works.
Gotcha.
You just have to write them and ask for permission, and they should grant it to you.
Okay.
But sending a disc is not that difficult.
No, it's not a huge
deal. Protections that it gives you.
Right, right. And what I've done in a workflow sense is I set up a preset that exports those files based on and names them based on date, because you got to fill out a form that has the date, you know, date made and all this kind of stuff, and just get that going. But we'll end the copyright discussion. Good, it's a good topic, and it's something we should come back to. But we're kind of getting over time, so we'll call that good. And thank you, guys, for the input on this. Some good thoughts for the business. Anybody else on a non-copyright note have anything they want to add to our business discussion, or are we ready to move on?
Yeah, one thing that recently came up in a conversation when I was talking with a couple other photographers here is the difference of selling commodity photography or selling the photographer themselves. A lot of photographers, you know, we sell photography when we're shooting like a product for a catalog. We're just banging it out, white background, clipping pass, and then it's going into a catalog. That's one thing. But what a lot of us are trying to market to is now selling us as the photographer, selling us as the creative. So it's very much getting away from, you know, shooting just a photo and people thinking of it just as a single photo versus, you know, becoming an artist and selling yourself as an artist.
Building a personal brand, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. So do you have a particular, just in the terms of that's something to think about in terms of our marketing then?
Definitely, yeah. Because, like, you know, if you just set yourself up with here's an hourly rate or here's a price per picture rate, a lot of times people will say, okay, well, you know, let's just do that. And then if you discount that, they're like, okay, well, how come we're not discounting it all the time then?
Right. So it's just building that reputation. And I've certainly found that to be the case in the pictorial type work. It seems like that's almost the only way to succeed for the few people that are doing it for the landscapes and things like that, is having that personal brand.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Very good stuff, guys. I don't want to drag too long. So if we have no other things to add, we're going to go into our picks of the year. Whoa. Come on, Dennis. You got to back up my sound effect or something? Barry? Anything?
Nothing for you.
They all hung up on me.
Okay, try it again.
Here we go. We're going to wrap that up now, and we're going to move into our picks of the year. Nice. I like it. That's good. You're better. Dennis is actually pretty good at the sound effects side. He is my soundboard.
I missed the bells that he had last year.
The bells were good. I wish he...
The bells fell apart. I went to go shake them, and they just went everywhere. And so that's why I went with the chestnuts roasting. So maybe, I'll work on that.
Well,
so.
And I may send you a T-shirt that says, I am Gavin's soundboard or something like that.
Another? Are you going to send me another one? Hey-o.
Okay, yeah, let's do some picks.
Hey. He can't wear that bear spray T-shirt every day.
That's right. That's right.
I will. Yep. I heard Gav's bear spray.
Barry, I know where you live, and I have bear spray. A lot of it. Okay, we're going to do picks. So basically, here's the thing. We're going to just kind of roll through one person at a time. Let's try not to get, you know, I know sometimes with picks we get into 10-minute discussions. We have a lot of cool picks I want to throw out there so people have lots of ideas and different price ranges. I have plenty that we can throw in a couple fillers. I'll keep notes as we're going along. All this stuff we talked about today, guys, is going to be in the show notes on profotoshow.net or .com. And we're just going to go through and share some cool stuff, and then we'll just go through a couple times and try and get lots of cool picks. So no specific time limit. We'll just try and keep it efficient. And with that, let's start off with Barry. Give us a pick of the year.
My pick of the year, without any hesitation, is that snazzy little Hasselblad to Nikon mount that I found. I am loving shooting that 80mm planar Carl Zeiss lens, an 82-8 lens. It's just unbelievable glass. I love putting it on there. I love the comments I get from people when they see me hang that lens on the front of one of my Nikons. It just looks different. It feels different, and it's a real live, you can focus it lens. Love it, love it, love it. Next.
So before we go on, let's get a little bit more info on that, because that's probably a little more obscure than most people have heard about. Effectively, somebody probably that had a Nikon, I imagine these are probably available for Canon too. You could go out and they could probably find a good Hassie lens. I know they're not cheap, but you could probably pick up one off eBay and buy this mount and not be in that much deeper than you would buying the latest L lens or the high-end Nikon lens.
Correct. Correct. Cool. And what you get is you get two things. You get a lens that will be one of the brightest lenses you'll ever hang on a camera, because the optics of that lens are expecting to basically illuminate a 2.25 by 2.25 capture area, and you're using only the centermost part of the glass.
Nice.
So it is very bright. The focus rings on those lenses have actual resistance to them, unlike when we flip our current lenses onto manual focus, and then, you know, they flop around and they just, you can barely see the focus effect in the viewfinder anyway. When you slap one of those lenses on, you have resistance to the touch as you rotate the ring. It snaps into focus in the viewfinder. The optics are ridiculously sharp. And it's a throwback old school, makes you think Everything's manual. You stop the lens down, so you got to rattle it open to focus if you need to 2.8, and then back to whatever you're going to shoot it at. But the bokeh on those lenses are ridiculously good. So
cool.
I'm just a fan. It's retro. It's old school. I like it.
Yeah, that's great. And the focus thing is cool too, because most of our new lenses don't have a smooth focus. And if there's one thing the B-Groover likes, it's smooth.
I'll take it.
And I do need a link from you. And do you know if it's available for Canon?
Yes, it is available for Canon.
Cool. And shoot me a link.
Yeah.
And Dennis, what do you got for a pick? Let's keep it rolling here and get some cool stuff out there.
All right. I will have some fun picks and some functional picks.
Okay.
This one's a functional pick. Not exciting, but it's going to be very quick.
Okay.
For my inside studio work, I use a lot of canvases, muslin canvases. And keeping in the whole tradition of trying to keep it right in camera, get it right in camera, fix it while you're taking the picture, I invested in it's this fabric steamer, and it works out awesome. When I have sessions coming over, I set up the studio, the backdrop, and pull this thing out in 45 seconds, and it's ready to go. And it just takes out all the wrinkles that are in the muslin, something where I would have used Photoshop up until then to get rid of, like, if there's major creases or wrinkles in the canvases. It is the Steamfast, SF407 1500-watt fabric steamer, which sounds very scary, but it's not. It sounds like you could drive it to work, but you can't.
Very cool.
But very functional, very boring, but very functional.
Very cool.
Go.
And I will put that link in the show notes for the cool little steamer, and I'll link it to the, looks like it's an Amazon product. By the way, if you use our Amazon links, we do get a little bit of a kickback, helps out the show a little bit, but it'll be linked in the show notes. And John, what do you got for us? Give us a pick.
So I have a bunch of picks, actually, of really good stuff this year, but some really good stocking stuffers for everybody out there right now is those little bobo levels that you can put on your hot shoe. They're amazing, especially for doing architectural work. And 1-inch black gaffer tape. It's indispensable on any commercial photo shoot. The gaffer tape you can do anything with. You can tape down your lens if you're worried about slipping focus or anything like that. And they're all very inexpensive, so they're amazing stocking stuffers.
Very cool.
And you can get them all at Midwest Photo. They do amazing strobus stuff as well to get you out there.
Excellent. So bubble level and a roll of gaffer's tape can work wonders. Very cool. And we will come back to you so we can get a couple more of yours, too. We'll keep it moving here. Brady, what do you got for us?
Well, I went to Joe McNally's Flash Bus Tour, and I was really impressed by the Last Delight Tri-Grip and the LumaQuest LTP. In fact, I bought one of each, and I've used them on quite a number of portraits on location. And the quality of light is exceptional, and both of the pieces of equipment fit in the outside pocket of a Think Tank roller bag. So it's pretty inexpensive and very small and portable.
So these are a flash modifier then, or?
The Last Delight Tri-Grip is a collapsible rigid reflector, and the LumaQuest LTP is like a 10-inch by, I don't know, 12 or 14-inch collapsible hot shoe softbox. And
cool.
It's just big enough to give quality light, but not so gigantic that, you know, you need an assistant or sandbags to use it in the field. It doesn't really catch the wind.
Very cool. Excellent. We will link that in the show notes. And if you do have a link, send me. I can probably look it up on Amazon or something. But very cool. Let's go. That's me.
That's you, yeah.
I'm going to have to say I got lots of things on the list, but I'm going to have to say one of my favorites so far for this year is the you guys know I love LEDs. And last year it was those little mini LED panels that were great for rings and close-ups and stuff like that. Well, now we're taking it to a whole new level with 126 LEDs. And light panels have been around for a while, but LED light panels have been really expensive. Well, this is a 126 LED video light, has a hot shoe on it, runs on like 6 rechargeable batteries. It actually comes with all these adapters so it can run on like a Sony battery pack and stuff. And I'm like, who has that? But anyway, it has all this stuff in there. But it's really bright. This thing cranks out a lot of light. It's about 8 inches by 5 inches, I would say. So it's a fairly good size, produces a really nice soft light. It has a filter built into it. So you can have open bare bulb LEDs. You can have diffuser, which is just kind of a nice white soft light. LEDs produce a bit of a whitish light, but it's very, very soft box-ish. And then there's also a warming filter. So I've been using this. It's actually a video light, and I've been using it really successfully. I did a video for Ken Whitmire where we did an on-photography video where he was just talking about the industry and stuff, and I'll link it in the show notes, but it actually came out really well. But I lit it with this light, and it worked well. But it goes beyond that. I mean, you could grab a couple of these. They last for quite a while. Stick them on light stands and do some beautiful work with portraits. And it's really cool. And the great thing about this light is it cranks out a lot of light. It's dimmable, and it's like $35. So that's the big thing, is it's so cheap for what you can do with it. There's a ton of potential with this, and it really takes this little LED light idea to a new level. Yes, you could just mount it on the camera and use it as an LED light. You could also put it on stands and go beyond that. So very cool. And let's come back to Barry. Give us another one.
I've kind of fallen in love with the Rogue Flashbender. If you haven't seen it, it's a fairly sizable, heavy-duty it's a big bounce card that has kind of some metal ribbing in it, so that right. You can shape it and curl it and make it a snoot and wrap it around. And I do a lot of crazy off-camera lighting things where I am constantly looking to block the light from coming back to the lens and do different things. I've just found it. It's been a really helpful thing. It's, you know, $35 or something, and it's just been really, really useful. And I like, because it's so stiff and yet it's bendable at the same time. So I like the flexibility it gives me. There you go.
Very cool. And actually, yeah, I think we've mentioned that in the past, but I'm glad you're using it. And I've played with it just a little bit, but that's good to know that it's working well for you. It looked like a neat little gadget. So we will put that in there too. And let's keep moving on. Let's come back to Dennis. Let's go to you.
All right, I got a double shot here. It's another couple functional, so they're not exciting yet. Okay. Wait till we get to the exciting picks. Oh boy, you won't be able to contain yourself. You mentioned that the LED that you picked has rechargeable batteries. I'm going to once again recommend the brand that I love is those Sanyo Analoog batteries. I switched to those a while back, yep. Probably on someone else's recommendation on the show, and have not looked back. Very reliable. Double A's for sure for all the speed light stuff. Love it. Those are awesome. And then this year I did a lot more experimenting with time-lapse photography. So I gave the Transcend Compact Flash, the CF card, the big one, the 32-gigabyte card that Amazon lists here. It's a UDMA, so it's a very fast card. And it's only $65 for 32 wow. gigabytes. And I was skeptical, but it has great reviews on Amazon. So
what's it feel like to have so many images on one card?
It's scary, which is why I just do it with time lapse. Okay. Non-paid project. Because it's one of those things where it's probably fine, but it's like you don't want to put your eggs all in one basket kind of thing. So I have a lot of 4 and 8 gigabyte baskets that I carry around at weddings and stuff like that. So, but that's my two functional picks. Be excited for these next couple I got.
Okay, very cool. We got some good stuff going here. And let's let me know if I miss anybody as I'm going through, because I'm not taking quite in order. But let's go to Brady again. Brady, what do you got?
Let's go with a couple of books.
Cool.
I would say John Harrington's Best Business Practices, second edition, is without a doubt the best photography book ever written. This thing has real legitimate negotiation emails, real legitimate contracts, real legitimate situations in the book that's probably like 500 pages. I mean, the thing is honest to God, 2.5 inches thick. And it's only like $20. It's a really, really remarkable book.
Very cool.
And then I would say anything by, Richard Avedon is a good buy. Anything by Yosef Karsh is a good buy. I just got Annie Leibovitz's book. I think it's called At Work or something like that. It's about her process for taking a number of photos. That's a really good book, too.
Very cool.
So I think I'll pass the rest of my time on to somebody else while I get to the fun stuff in a little bit.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's go to you, John.
So starting out with some fun stuff here, I just recently got the Fuji X100. We picked it up earlier this year. Amazing little camera. love it to pieces there. And Fuji just came out with their new X10, which is like its little brother, and it's very reasonably priced. You know, on Amazon right now it's $599. Very cool. It's actually a zoom lens now versus just the fixed lens, but perfect for street photography. So it would be an amazing camera for anybody to get. I know there's a ton of pro shooters shooting with the X100 right now, for their personal stuff as well as their fun stuff. So it'd be really, really great to get, and amazing Christmas present.
Very cool. Now, just to clarify, the X10, I think you said, right? Is it the X10? It is geared. I mean, it's a higher end camera, but it's geared more towards point and shoot. It's not as big a sensor and stuff as the X100. Am I correct on that?
Exactly. Okay. It's still a Fuji sensor, so it still has the nice tonal range and the nice colors.
Excellent.
But it is smaller than the APS size. So that's where, if you do have the funds to get the X100, I would definitely get it. It's really amazing, and I love it. We take it to all the family functions. It can throw in just a little over-the-shoulder bag or even in a pocket, and it's amazing.
Very cool. Very cool. And Dennis, have you gone in this round? I think you did, didn't you? Am I up again?
You're up again.
Okay.
Yep, you're up.
And I will go again. First of all, I'm going to add one real quick, and this has been a pick before, but I'm going to add one real quick to Dennis's pick, because I've switched over to pretty much exclusively those Sanyuan loops, so I have that consistency. They're a good battery. They have a good capacity. And what I use with those, and this is like the must-have charger, and that's the LaCrosse Technology BC700 charger. This thing is the supercharger. I don't mean that in the case of a car. It only holds four batteries. You can get ones that hold eight, but this thing will condition. It has different charging modes. It's got an individual screen for every single battery, so you can run diagnostic modes, and it'll find out which batteries are bad. It's a really cool little setup, and it's not that expensive. It's like $30 or $35, and not a super fast charger, although it will charge reasonably fast because you can select the charge rate, but really good. It's a really well-reviewed unit, and you can pick one up for about $35 and charge those batteries and maintain those batteries. There's all kinds of modes and stuff like that. So I'll link that in the show notes and the chat room as well, but it's very cool. And then one more thing on top of that is the DSLR bot. And I'll link that in the show notes as well. It's dslrbot.com. What this is a application that you hook up an infrared cable into the headphone jack of your iPhone, and I'm not sure if it's available for Android yet. I don't believe it is, but you put an infrared into the iPhone. It comes with a Velcro strap. You mount it on the front of the camera, aiming at the infrared sensor on your camera. So you just strap it to the lens or something, and then it's an iPhone app, and you can use it as an intervalometer. You can do bracketing. There's movie mode. There's all kinds of long exposure stuff. It's this whole app for setting up, programming, time-lapse sequences, or anything you want with almost infinite control right from this little iPhone app, which costs about $5. And then the little infrared cord that comes out of the headphone jack is like $10 or something, I think, if you buy one from them. Or there's even instructions on their site to make one yourself with simple components you can get at Radio Shack. Very cool little app that gives you a lot of control. There's some gadgets out there that do this that are pretty expensive that are meant for controlling the camera like this, and you can do it right from an iPhone and I believe an iPod Touch too using this little app. It's very cool.
Neat.
It's pretty snazzy. Okay, and I think we're back to Barry.
Barry.
Barry, go again.
Well, I'm going to throw an iPhone 4S in as my pick of the year. Having finally gotten an iPhone and playing with this, I'm looking at it from this standpoint. It is, first of all, it's fun to have a phone that really does have a camera that is frighteningly good for those few times that really cool things just happen to appear in front of us and we just don't have another camera with us. It's pretty cool. But beyond that, the organization, just the reminders, the Siri thing is just way too much fun. But it is really, I'm finding ways to connect a lot of business related strategies because I finally have a phone in my hand that seems to be a better assistant, setting reminders and doing email things and whatever. But I'm just having a lot of fun now also exploring the absolute dirge of photo related apps and things that are out there. It's just way fun. Things like what you just talked about, Gav that are out there. So I just have to say the iPhone has really been transformational for me, and I'm loving it.
The iPhone, that's cool. I haven't got an S yet, but it's like the Swiss Army knife when you're out in the field, because there's so many just on photography note, there's so many apps related to photography that I use in it, that it's, you know, tracking the sun and tracking exposures and all kinds of stuff.
Yep. Very cool.
Very cool. Dennis is mentioning in the comics that Barry suffered for years with the Droid.
I did. It was a 2-year event, and it's been a big change for me. So,
very cool, excellent. Okay, and who's next? Dennis, go ahead.
The fun wagon just pulled up to the station.
Whoop!
Here we go. I have distilled water. No, just kidding. That's my pick. No, my pick is also an iPhone related pick. It's a neat little device that I found. And it's one of those inventions that you look at and say, why couldn't I think of that and make millions of dollars? And I believe this was a Kickstarter project.
Wait, this isn't the lens you strap on the front, is it?
Oh, heavens no. You know how I feel about that. Say with me, Barry, just okay. Because you can.
Doesn't mean you should.
Okay. It's called the Glyph. It's an iPhone 4 and 4S tripod mount and stand.
Oh.
And it's like a little Swiss Army knife for your iPhone to watch movies vertically, horizontally. Better yet, it also works with any standard tripod mount. So you can put it on your big boy beefy tripods or the pods, and just have it, you know, be able to hold it still and do videos and such.
Okay, wait.
Takes a shake out of it.
First of all, this is cool. Second of all, picture me. I'm like, I've got the Glyph. I've got my big old Enduro tripod, and I'm mounted on there. I've got the Leica case, so my thing looks like camera. And I've got the strap-on lens, and I'm out in the field. And people are like, hey, there's Ansel Adams.
Well, they'll say, hey, there's something, but I don't know if it'll be Ansel Adams.
Oh, good pick, Dennis. That looks really cool.
Christmas cheer.
And it's 19, only,
under $20.
Under
too.
$20. That's a good little stocking stuffer. And hey, Let's go to who's next. How about you, Jonathan? Go again.
Yeah, so going with the app type theme right now, two of my need-to-have apps, especially for my iPad as well as my iPhone, are Easy Release. It's a never leave the house out of with, and Shutter Snitch. Shutter Snitch is basically wireless tethering with an iFi card to your iPad, and both are amazing. We use them every single day, so we always have all our releases electronically, as well as Shutter Snitch. You know, we can go out of the studio into different environments and shoot tethered to the iPad, and it's amazing.
Okay, so I'm a little confused. I'm just trying to clarify. Easy Release then is like a Shutter Release that somehow wirelessly connects, or
Easy Release is actually model releases and property releases.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So anytime you take a picture of a person, if you can get them to sign a release, it saves you a whole lot of hassle if they refuse to, or like if they do a cease and desist order and all that type of stuff. You have the release, and if you have it with your on the iPhone, you will always have a release form with you, so you don't ever have to leave home without having paperwork.
Great. And how do they? So that's especially would be useful for stock photographers and stuff. How do they sign it, or what is it? How does it work?
You sign it with your finger on an iPhone, or you can actually get these little stylists at various electronic stores that actually work on the iPhone or the iPad. It's really amazing, and it's also reduced our amount of paperwork by a ton.
Is it legal? I mean, is it official as a legally binding contract?
It is. It's actually just as legal. Getty Images is actually Getty Image release. So very, very airtight release.
Very cool. So, and then the Shutter Snitch is just a tethering app then. I'm just trying to clarify what these do.
Yeah. Shutter Snitch is a wireless tethering app. So you need to have an iFi card within your camera. So unfortunately, it is only SD. But you know, if you have an SD card in there, you can actually wirelessly transmit your photos without any wireless network or anything like that to an iPad. So if you have an iFi card and Shutter Snitch, you can be wirelessly tethered anytime, anywhere.
Very cool, very cool. Well, let's jump into just a couple more on the practical side. Maybe we'll get back to some physical objects just a little bit for those that don't have iPhones. And everyone hasn't. Sorry, no, okay. Brady, you got one more for us.
Yeah, I mean on the practical side, I've been spending a couple of months each year living in an Army surplus tent at almost 10,000 feet in elevation in the Rockies with no running water, no electricity, no phone, no internet, no nothing. And up there, you're literally on your own for everything. And so what I found really useful is the Buck 119 hunting knife, the Leatherman Surge Paracord 550, and, a microfiber travel towel. That combination of things can basically keep you going for a long time. And if you've got some money to spend, Exped, E-X-P-E-D, makes an amazing down-filled air mattress that compresses to like the size of a basketball. It's called like the Exped Down Mat 7 or 9. And it is the warmest, most comfortable mat I've ever slept on in my life, better than even a mattress. So if you've got some outdoor stuff going on, kind of you know, adventure. Take a look.
Yeah, no, that stuff, I've been spending more and more time outdoors, and I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to my pack and what's in it. So just to review, the Buck 119 is a hunting knife. The Leatherman Surge is yet another knife, but it has it has a little bit of everything. Paracord 550, if that's the same thing I'm thinking of, we've actually talked about that before. It's those little spools of 550-pound parachute cord, which is awesome. That stuff's awesome for all kinds of stuff. I carry one of those in the kit and in the trailer as well. And the Exped down mat, and I think I missed one. What was the other thing on there that you had?
A microfiber travel towel.
Microfiber.
They're packaged down to the size of like a memory card reader, and they dry off real quick, and you can just set it out by the fire, and an hour or two later, it's dry and ready to be used again.
Cool, very cool. And there will be links to all that. I'll look that stuff up and get it in the show notes. And let's see. Dennis, did you have one more?
No, I'm good. I want to hear you just clear out the rest of the shelves.
Well, I probably actually have too many to clear out all the rest of the shelves, but I will hang on. I'm just making notes here. I'll just throw off one or two more real quick here. One is the Super Blower. And this thing, I think I actually made it a pick of the week, but it's really cool. It's really handy. And what it is instead of canned air, you have the super blower. It's basically like a vacuum motor with a blower on it. And it has different nozzles and stuff like that. It's very powerful. I'm trying to find the link here, kind of scrambling as I'm talking, and I'm not seeing it. But it's just a cam with a motor in it that you hold in your hand. It is loud. I apologize. All I had on my list was super blower. It's the DataVac DataVac electric duster is what it is. And it's like $50. But the thing is, this thing is, I mean, you can clean out computers and stuff with this really effectively without using canned air. And it really blows. And this thing cranks it out there. It's very cool and definitely worth a look. I will do one more. But does anybody else have any first that they want to throw in there?
I've got one last one if you want it.
You bet. Go for it.
I recently transferred all of my equipment over into three different types of cases, and it's really made things easier. So I bought one of those, I think they're called the Rock and Roller R12 carts or something like that. I don't have the name handy, but we can look that up, I'm sure.
Super and cart? On
super, maybe.
I'm just kidding. Keep going.
It's the R12 something or another. It's called the Rock and Roller R12 all-terrain cart, and they're about $250. But on that cart, I've been transporting all of my lighting equipment in three Pelican 1650 cases, which are really amazing, lifetime warranted, waterproof, indestructible cases. Then I've got one shapeshifter backpack from Think Tank Photo that I store, you know, just cameras in for quick and easy shooting. And I've also got the airport case from Think Tank Photo that holds an entire camera kit in it. And between those three sets of bags and cases, I haven't had a need for anything else in almost a year.
Excellent. So you got it all consolidated into that one little area.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're all just grab and go bags and cases, basically.
Perfect. Very cool. Excellent. I will put those in the show notes too. I've been copying off my my links here, so that sounds great. Anybody else have another one before we wrap up?
You got a couple more.
Oh, I have lots more, but we won't go through all of them. First of all, one that I will throw out there is on a very practical side is the Vyair 007370P heavy duty portable compressor. And this is good. You know what? If you're out in the field and you need air, or if you get stuck on the beach and you have to air down your tires, you need air. This is a cool little thing to have in the rig. It's not big. It plugs into a cigarette lighter, but it's not one of those super ridiculously junky ones. It's not super heavy duty. It does, you know, it'll only go for so long before it has to cool down, but it's like $45 and it's a portable little compressor for filling tires or other things that you can have with you that is actually a good quality little compressor. So that's a nice little one. The other one that I really enjoy is the Gerber folding spade. This one on the note of my travels and things like that. You know, I bought the cheapy little shovel that you get for like $9.95 at Walmart, and it didn't take very long before it started falling apart. And the Gerber folding spade, this thing is like the Cadillac of little folding shovels. It's like 24 inches long when it's unfolded. So we're not talking full-size shovel here. We're talking about compact, and it folds down to a nice little square, and it actually has even a belt case if you want it. So if you're out in the field, that's a really great thing to have along with you. And vitamin D.
Did you just pick a vitamin as your pick of the year? Is that a hip hop group, Vitamin D? I don't, because I mean their first album was decent, but I think they kind of sold out.
You didn't let me finish. This is a Christmas show. You take vitamin. Okay, it's vitamin D.
Okay, sorry.
Eggnog.
Oh.
Two shots of espresso. Blender.
Super blender or regular blender?
Either way, works fine.
Okay.
That would be absolutely awful. Don't do that. Don't destroy coffee in that
way. So it is the hip-hop group.
It's the hip-hop group. No, I don't want to give medical advice here, but I have to say I've always had struggled with colds. My wife's naturopath and midwife, you know, would say, hey, take vitamin D. So I started getting vitamin D and taking it. And I've also taken some elderberry juice and this and that. But the vitamin D, I've been loading up on that pretty well. And I have to say, I have really avoided the colds really well this year. And the past year, I've just not gotten nailed like I have in the past. It really does seem to be working. So I am no doctor, and you can do your own research. But you know, as photographers, sometimes we have to work on certain days, and it's always this dread of, oh, am I going to be sick as a dog when I have to do this wedding or this portrait? There's no cure for the common cold. Well, there are things, and I'm sure they work differently for different people, but this vitamin D really does seem to help keep those immunities high. So, you know, I won't tell you exactly what to take or anything like that. I don't want to get into that territory, but do your homework on that and look into that. So I know that's a really strange pick to round off with. But
are you a fish guy? Do you like to eat a lot of fish?
Not particularly.
Okay.
But why? Do you have a fish tip?
Well, no, but fish is very high in vitamin D. So you could eat fish.
You could get your vitamin D from that.
You could from real food, yes.
Right.
Unless
right.
You are talking about the hip-hop group, which I am so excited. Do you want to get tickets to their next concert?
Is there really a hip-hop group called Vitamin D? Because that's awesome.
There is now. I just registered with GoDaddy. We got a few months to get our act together, guys.
Come excellent, on. Excellent. Well, and since I've completely derailed us, one thing, and since I did mention coffee, I will mention Bean Review. I've got a blog, a coffee blog actually for you coffee lovers called epicbean.com, and I post stuff in my travels. I visit roasters and stuff like that. It's not that I need another project, but I post bean reviews. And if you're a coffee lover, check out the Madcap Coffee Roasting Company, El Porvenir from Madcap Coffee. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. This is one I just reviewed over on the site. Absolutely phenomenal. I ranked it a 17 out of 20. And if you're a coffee lover, this is a technically an espresso blend, but it's just beautiful. It's chocolatey. It's rich. It's got a great, delicate, lingering finish. It's just super. So if you love coffee, check out the Madcap El Porvenir, and there's a food pick. Now that I've gotten us completely off track, anything else that anybody wants to add into this conversation, or are we good?
Okay, I have one more then, if you
okay,
like.
Okay, good, good.
And this is from really from my friend Dennis especially. If you like taking pictures of people holding fish, Then I recommend the Rapala DT6 crankbait.
Oh, DT6. I will write it down, but now we're really off track. But you know what? Photographers do other things.
It's photography related. That's right. It is. I have nice pictures of Dennis holding fish.
Well,
off
so
the
was
Rapala DT6.
So was
right.
So was my coffee, because I took a photo of that bag for the review. That coffee bag, the photo of that, it's not the best ever commercial photo, but I took a photo and I spent like 10 minutes with the LED light and that mm-hmm. bag of Madcap El Porvenir and did a photo of it for my blog. So there's that video light. I had my 3-year-old holding up that little LED light for me.
I just thought you used your new espresso preset.
Is that real? No.
There is an effect in Color Fantasies called Morning Coffee.
Oh.
It's not espresso, but now that you've given me that idea, there probably will be in the next version. All right, everybody, first of all, before we close, does anybody have any final closing thoughts or things we missed? I don't want to ramble on for too long, but this has been a fun show. I think we got tons of good picks, and we even got into adventure tools, coffee, and vitamins. We're going to cover everybody. And crankbaits. How can you cover more than that? So any closing thoughts or anything we might have missed that anybody wants to bring up?
Yeah, my closing thoughts would be that Selena Matreya, who is a photography consultant, has a really great series of webinars called The Clarion Call, C-L-A-R-I-O-N-C-A-L-L. And it's all about the business and marketing of the work that you want to be doing. So instead of just being a generalist photographer making money, she brings in all these experts, you know, photo editors, photo buyers, photographers, etc., who have done very well, and they give real life input on how to get from where you are to where you want to go.
Excellent.
And some of them are free, and some of them have a small cost to register, but they're well worth it.
Now, what's the name? How do you spell that? Because it's a little bit of a long name.
I'm gonna have to look that one up. But let's go to the next person, and I'll have it for you.
Anybody else have any closing thoughts?
No.
All right. Well, we're gonna get Brady in here with that link. But before, as we wind down here, let's have everybody shout out their websites and projects and things they got going on so people can check those out, and Twitters if you want and all that good stuff. And Barry, where can they find you? I know you've been blogging pretty actively, some good stuff going up on your blog. Where can they check that out?
Pictureplace.com. Everything is linked off there, the blog, the Facebook, the whole deal. Yeah, I've been a little plucky on the blogging lately this fall, but it's been kind of fun. So
excellent. And Dennis, DZPix.com?
DZPix for everything. DZPICS.com.
Video. That's it. Okay. And sorry, I've just said it so many times, I'm trying to stylize a little bit, you know? I'm worried. Okay. John. Jonathan, thank you for joining us. It's been great to have you, and I hope that I didn't shock you with the strangeness of this podcast, but it's been really fun. And where can they find you at?
So my commercial photo site is lightimaging.ca, and our most recent personal project is fortheloveofit.ca.
What's with that .ca thing? Is something wrong with your site?
You know,
Canada.
Us people up in Canada, you know, the .ca.
Okay, no, sorry, I just had to say that. Brady, did you come up with that link at all yet?
Yeah, her name is spelled S as in Sam, E L I N A, M as in Mary, A I T as in Thomas, R E Y A.
Yeah, we never, ever would have guessed that.
Yeah, and it appears to be that her websites are selenamatreya.com and professionalphotographyteleseminar.com.
Okay, but she has some good stuff.
Absolutely. It's well worth whatever small registration fee there is.
Excellent. Well, we will link that in the show notes too. And of course, as always, you can find me at simestudios.com, and I won't rattle off all my Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus links, because you can get to pretty much all my projects from there, and many of them have different pages and links for each one. So you can check them all out, simestudios.com. And the only other one I will mention, of course, is Sime Effects, which helps bring you Pro Photo Show, seimeffects.com. And check out the new stuff over there and the coming Lightroom workshops. I think you'll enjoy those. Side note, anybody here going to Imaging USA?
When is that this year?
It is.
Into January?
Into January, about the 15th to 17th, I think. And I'm going this year. We're actually going to be driving. We're taking off for the winter. I've been getting my trailer all geared up and trying to buckle things down around the studio. We're going to be taking off until April and roaming around doing landscapes and stuff in the warmer states. And I'm going to be teaching a few workshops along the way for some private groups and things like that. And it's going to be fun, but I'm going to be at Imaging. Long story short, so hopefully some of you will be there. Maybe we can touch bases, and maybe, who knows, we'll even have a little PPS meetup over there. So if you are going to be there, head over to the forum thread or shoot me an email, profotoshow@gmail.com, and just shout out, and hopefully we can get together there. It should be fun. I hear it's pretty cool. It's the first time I've done Imaging, so. Excelente. Well, thank you all, Barry, Dennis, Brady, Jonathan, Gavin. Oh, that's me. Thank you for joining us all on the Christmas episode. Dennis, can you ring us out into the new year with maybe some jingles or something?
I have zero jingles. I
can you do bells with your mouth? Because you're pretty good at sound effects.
No.
I hear water.
Well, I'm clanking ice in a glass.
Okay, that's kind of like...
Yeah. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you all. Have a Merry Christmas and New Year, and we will talk to you in 2012. You know, I didn't get to ask this question, but you use the medium format digital stuff. So apparently for the clientele you're using, they're needing a lot of resolution. What's the deal with that? I mean, I know what the deal is, but just get, you know, what's the lowdown on that?
Definitely. Like, we just invested in a Phase P65 Plus. So it's a 60 megapixel camera back. And then with that, we got a set of Schneider leaf shutter lenses for a medium format camera kit. And then on top of that, we also picked up a Arca Swiss view camera system.
Wow.
So, you know, needless to say, it's a very expensive system. But at the same time, it's almost more for myself and the enjoyment of shooting, and also the ease of it, but also to get the tonal range that we wanted for especially my personal project. You know, you don't necessarily have to have the equipment to drive what you're doing, but at the same time, the equipment does help.
It's nice to have, yeah.
Does
it pull more dynamic range than our DSLRs?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, like with the, you know, I'm looking at between 12 to 13 stops worth of dynamic range off of the 65. So
we're like right in there. It's like film.
It is. I'm classically trained in the zone system. So, right. And I started out shooting 4x5.
Right. So you have all the.
Exactly. And so to get back to shooting that way and shooting with not necessarily behind the camera anymore, beside the camera, it actually is really nice. Because you actually get that more personal rapport with the people, you get to have the conversation. You know, with the view camera, the camera's locked down on the tripod, so you can't really be moving around. You have to tell people to stay still. You know, they can't really move that much because you only have like 1 to 2 inches worth of focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I just found like in my commercial world, we were going way too fast. Everything was speeding up. You know, we're running DSLRs tethered to the iPad. Everything was get like 50 shots in a day. And my personal project, we're getting one shot per photo shoot. And a photo shoot is between 2 to 3 hours. So it's definitely rewarding. It's definitely rewarding to have.
Yeah, that's
cool. Sounds to me like it's the ultimate New Year's resolution.
Okay,
plus 5.
5? Wow, yeah. Okay, 5. Barry says that he was chiming in O Canada as we were wrapping up, and he must have cut out, so he gets a bonus plus 5 for that, too.
Yep. Yes.
Hey, I have a question, though. You know, God Save the Queen has been out there forever. What happens someday when we actually get a king over there? Do they rewrite the song, or what?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. It's out of Buddhist, but we need to find out.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things, you know, we all learn it. And, you know, it's the way it's been. You know, you go to any hockey game now up here. And, you know, of course, we have both flags flying all the time. And it's definitely different. It's a very
interesting multicultural society right now.
I've been to Canada a few. I've square danced in Canada a time or two. They have some big events up there sometimes, and they always sing the song. And it's the thing is about O Canada. It's a really nice song to hum along. You're just like, you know, it's just kind of rolls off the tongue. So cool. Brady, are you heading up into the high mountains soon here for the winter?
Yeah, I've got two weddings on New Year's Eve weekend that I have to shoot. And as soon as those are edited, I'm heading out to Colorado, and I'll probably be there until the next assignment pops up. So it could be a month, or it could be 3 months. I don't know.
Very cool. So you're just going to hang out there. Didn't one of your team get buried in an avalanche last year? That sounds like a pretty crazy place.
Yeah. So my cousins, Nick and Joe, moved out there. And my cousin Nick is an adrenaline junkie, backcountry skier. He's an arborist, so he cuts down, you know, trees for a living, and like climbs up the trees 100 feet in the air and takes them down in sections. He's really crazy.
Wow.
And my cousin Joe is this really laid back hippie, and they're total opposites, but they're best friends. And when I was out there two times ago, they were skiing a backcountry run. I was with them on that run the day before, but this day, you know, I wasn't in the kind of shape they're in, so I couldn't go every day. I was sitting on the couch recovering. And when they're out there skiing, now keep in mind, you're miles away from the nearest person. You're 10, 15,000 feet up. If something happens, you're on your own.
Wow.
So Joe skis down this run. Nothing happens. No big deal. Nick skis down the run next. He triggers a massive avalanche. He's buried 7 feet deep for 40 minutes.
Wow.
He absolutely should not have come out of there alive. You wear Avalungs, which are these breathing apparatus that let you breathe in the snowpack. And you've got a beacon on, which gives out a signal. So my cousin Joe had his beacon and probe. A probe is a 2 meter long stick you poke in the snow to find where somebody is. So he's got the beacon, tells him, you know, he's within a couple feet, and he starts using the probe. But Nick is about a foot deeper than that probe is long. And it just so happened Nick got buried with his feet up in the air, and Joe hit his boot and found him and dug him out, and Nick was barely conscious. And
that's crazy. So you speak of those beacons and the Avalon and stuff like it's not optional. I mean, you carry those if you're up in the mountains.
It's not optional. Yeah, correct. If you get caught up there, let me back up. If you're in the real legitimate backcountry, first off, you're an idiot to not have that stuff. You have to have a snow shovel, an Avalung, a beacon, and a probe. That's just the way it is. And you should have paracord or rappelling ropes too. But if you don't have that stuff and you trigger an avalanche or a search and rescue has to come and get you, there's a really good chance the police are going to charge you with any number of things, including reckless endangerment, because you're an idiot and just put the entire search and rescue patrol in danger.
So in the mountains, they actually have, there's actually a law against being an idiot, effectively.
I mean, I don't know about that, but they could charge you for the rescue. I mean, you just want to make it. You don't want to be stupid out
there. So before they had this technology, you just died?
I mean, when I was out there, a girl died in an avalanche a day or two before my cousin Nick was buried. It still happens.
Wow, this sounds like a pretty intense place, dude.
Yeah, I mean, this is real wilderness.
Wow. I remember seeing some photos from you, and it was pretty crazy. So it's something.
They had one moose and three bears go through camp within like 3 days looking for food. One of the bears tore apart one of the tents trying to get inside.
Wow. Do you carry bear spray?
No, we've got our rifles and shotguns.
Well, I don't have anything against those either, but bear spray is awful convenient right there. You can carry it everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I skied for the first time last year on a very controlled ski slope. It wasn't like avalanches, but it was awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Super, super cool. And I suppose... Yeah. Dennis, do you guys ski in Minnesota?
We don't have a whole lot of mountains out here. So it's a lot of cross-country skiers, but up on the North Shore, we've got some ski resorts for the downhill action.
So it's more like you hill. You don't mountain, you hill.
Yeah, there's not a lot of mountains out here at all, but that was a great story, Brady. I might tell that to the kids instead of a night before Christmas.
It was pretty crazy. Jonathan, were you saying something?
Yeah, no, that would be a great personal project to document that whole aspect of the backcountry. And
yeah,
that'd be an amazing, amazing portfolio piece to show people that's totally different. Because it's one of those things that, you know, if you live in a big city, you know, people never do. It's like, you know, a lot of the people even living in Toronto or New York have never even seen a forest. So it's, you know, as bad as it sounds, it would be an amazing thing to get out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I go out there for. I mean, the first couple trips are just building up the trust. You know, you've got folks out there who are intentionally living their lives in a very different way. And so they're sensitive to being exploited. But once, you know, you've got that trust built and that relationship's there, you've got access to some really unforgettable things.
So is there some kind of a town or village or something near there then that you're kind of based out of?
Yeah, the nearest recognizable town would be Telluride or Durango.
And what state is this?
Colorado.
Okay. So they're pretty. And how far away are those from where we're kind of places we're talking?
I mean, if no avalanche, if no rock slide, if no mudslide is run, it's a half an hour to Telluride.
Okay.
But when the avalanches run, and they trigger them by helicopter with explosives, you know, so that
closes things off.
Yeah, you might be closed off for a couple of days. So nobody in, nobody out.
So if you can ride the avalanche to town, it only takes like 10 minutes, but you might get the idiot ticket.
Yeah, exactly. you might not be coming back home.
Is it possible? Because it was you that prompted it last year. I started looking into avalanches and Avalon and stuff like that, because there might be a time when I'll want to look into that stuff. Is it actually possible to ride an avalanche down, or do they normally overtake
you? No, I mean,
you don't extreme snowboarders don't purposely ride an avalanche.
That was cute, Gav.
Well, I'm just checking, you know.
I mean, the only way you're going to get lucky here. If it's a small avalanche, you might get lucky and be able to outrun it. But if the snowpack breaks 2 or 3 or 4 feet deep, I mean, there's nothing you're going to do about it. It's racing down that mountain faster than you're going to go. Gigantic chunks of snow and ice flying by you. I mean, you're praying that, you know, you don't get knocked unconscious.
Wow,
or
that's crazy.
That Avalon doesn't come out of your mouth.
Gosh, it seems like James Bond has outrun him like 3 or 4 times.
I know.
Is there a way I can hold on to the great white shark's dorsal fin while it tries to eat me?
Absolutely. Go for it. What's ironic is I actually have cousins named Nick and Joe, too. So maybe,
are you guys related?
I don't think so. No, these guys, the descriptions don't quite fit.
Yeah, okay.
So
all right.
I don't think... But that sounds really terrifying, being buried under 7 feet. The idea of being like buried alive to me is really creepy, because you can't, I'm assuming you can't really move under there.
No, not at all. No. I mean,
you also have no idea what direction up is until you drool.
Yeah, and you don't know how long you've been there. You know you don't have a lot of air supply.
So there's no digging yourself out. It's not like you have mobility.
No.
No diggity.
I mean, think about being buried in concrete that's freezing cold.
So so basically you're under there and there's absolutely nothing you can do. You're entirely reliant on somebody finding you.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
wow.
You know, what I remember from when they got back to the camp was that Nick was, you know, pumped out of his mind. He had so much adrenaline racing through him, it wasn't even funny. And he's telling us this story and he's hugging Joe. Like, I love you, brother. I love you, man. And then Nick calls his boss and says, I just got buried in an avalanche. I'm changing my clothes. I'll be there soon. I'm sorry I'm going to be late to work. And he goes to work after he was just buried in an avalanche and almost died. Now, Joe, on the other hand, you know, it really affected him. He sat there and looked out the window for like the next 6 hours.
Right.
And he didn't really say anything. And, it really bothered him. But
pretty intense.
You know,
well, I'm going to be getting you a link to some Resolve Stainmaster here in a second if I don't go to the bathroom. So,
oh boy,
I know that feeling. I was actually gonna like sneak out while somebody else.
You,
was talking.
You're not. You never sneak out. You just say, "I'm gonna go use the restroom. I'll cut this part out," and then we make fun of you for 2 minutes, and then you come back.
I know, and then I come back, and you're getting to the end, and you're kind of getting off the gab and make fun of track, and then I come along that when I'm editing, and I'm like, oh,
"Come
I can't
on,
believe they said that about me." And
it's iron bladders or bust.
I actually had a Christmas pun. I was gonna say I have to go use the Santa can. Oh man!
Oh,
come
man.
On! That was a little Minnesota humor.
No, because our humor is actually funny.
Oh, okay, you know what? I'm coming down there this winter. I'm taking 3 months on the road. I'm showing up at your doorstep with bear spray, except for it's cold, so never mind.
Just bring that buck 119. That'll scare him straight.
You know what I could do when I leave to keep the studio secure is I could put bear spray in like all the corners and like tie the trigger wires to the door and stuff. So if anybody breaks in, the entire studio is like an instant cloud of bear spray.
I want to hear a little about that. I saw you posted on Facebook like a year back that you got broken into, but I never heard the details.
Somebody just busted in here. I shouldn't say busted. It wasn't like a window was broken. I don't know if they like cracked the lock or what. It was almost like they, you know, because in this area, it would typically be like meth heads or something that broke in. So I don't know how the door was nice and neatly unlocked. But effectively, what they did is they came in and they were grabbing things. And they were trying to grab my 30-inch cinema display because when I came in, it was all jerked around. But I've got holes in the desk for the cords. I mean, if you have a cinema display, you know, there's this big Hurricane attached cord. You don't just unplug it. So they were grabbing it. And then I think they kind of didn't like the time it was taking. They must have panicked because my studio is like all windows on the front and the highway goes right by. So, and everything's, and there's lights everywhere in here shining on print. So it's like a beacon in here at night. You're not going to hang out in here too long. Not necessarily that the local police are going to actually, you know, they might drive by and say, "Hey, there's a place getting robbed. Nice, buddy. Merry Christmas." But yeah. I shouldn't say that. But in any case, they took off. And basically they, on the way out, they grabbed my Pelican case, which was full of all my lighting stuff. So they didn't take a terribly large amount, and I did have a little bit of insurance on the business, and they replaced pretty much everything. But they got away with $2,000 or $3,000 worth of lighting stuff in my bag, my speed lights and things like that. And mainly it was just a drag. I mean, it's just frustrating, and this concern of the place not being safe, and so I still have my computers and stuff here. I try and leave as little here as possible in terms of really easy to carry off. That's the problem with all this camera gear. It's so easy to pack away. I mean, Jonathan, yeah. you got those digital backs. I mean, you can have 50, 60 gram worth of gear in a little backpack, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things that definitely whenever, like, I'm on location, like, all of our camera kits fit in carry-on size bags. Everything is airline carry-on.
You don't put it in the check-in.
Exactly. And then, like, even one of those, like, our one little carry-on bag is worth over $100,000.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Worth of gear in it. Yeah, and it's like, if somebody on one of our shoots, like one of my, if I'm not paying attention to it and we're out in a public place, somebody just picks up, walks away with it. It's like, okay, there goes $100,000.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
it's
just one of those things, like even like our small little lighting kits now, like all our Allen Chrome Rangers, they all fit in a Think Tank airport security 2 case.
Right.
So
right.
we have two packs, four heads, modifiers, cords,
pack
cables.
It all in there.
Exactly, in one little carry-on case. So
keep track of it. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of those hard things that when you're on location, you need the stuff, but at the same time, you hate to just let it sit there with nobody watching it, right?
Right. Well, and I'm kind of I'm a bit of a conservative, not a big insurance fan guy, but with all this gear in the field, I do have some on the equipment and stuff in the business.
Yeah.
The gear in particular. I mean, I travel a lot, and it's just like you're always thinking about it, and not that I'm still careful. I mean, it's too big of a hassle if you lose stuff. On a side note, a little tip actually for people out there, PPA really stepped it up this year. And I've been a member for a while now, but it was a struggle. But, it's like $200 or $300 a year. And I'm like, okay, what do I get? And they're there to support you. They have legal advisors. They won't like sue somebody for you, but they'll write up legal paperwork and stuff for you if you have an infringement or something like that. Send people letters, answer questions. And they have the convention, of course, and competition and all this good stuff. But this year, what they added for no extra charge is insurance for your equipment, which was huge. I mean, they invested a ton of the organization money, I think, into that. They're spending big bucks. I don't know what it is a month they're paying, but simply by being a member, you don't have to pay extra. If you are a PPA member, you simply have to opt in, and you have, gosh, I think it's like $20,000 worth of equipment insurance or something like that. It's pretty amazing.
It's 15 grand.
Okay.
It's okay insurance. It's not the best stuff going, but
it is there and it's included. It's a pretty huge perk in terms of membership, because there's a lot of people, particularly people that are starting out. if it's there, you know, absolutely jump in there and do it. I thought that was a huge member benefit that they added, which was that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so, I don't know of any other trade organization doing it.
That was huge, and I was thinking, smart move. And I've actually met the CEO of PPA. He did a little workshop for us, a leadership workshop a while back. And but it's brilliant because they had this thing going where I've been there a couple times of like, okay, yeah, they have this list of this and this and this and indemnification trust and all this stuff. But what do I actually get for my $300 a year? And when they did that, I'm like, that's genius, guys, because you just got all the people out there that are just starting out.
Yeah, the next thing that they got to actually look at is trying to get everybody on track with liability insurance.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge thing in our commercial world. Like, anytime I step on public property with my gear, I have to have between $2 to $5 million liability insurance.
It's actually a law, or it's just a good practice kind of thing?
We won't be able to shoot in a public space.
Wow, like, really? I don't believe we have that here. I'm not sure.
Like, if I'm shooting a commercial shoot at a city-owned property, for example, like we were shooting hockey rinks for the Toronto Maple Leafs there, mm-hmm. and I had to show proof of insurance even before I stepped in the arena.
Now, are we talking, when you say commercial, are you talking, would this even apply to somebody out going and doing a portrait in the park? Or when you say commercial, are you talking about you're setting up lights and rigs and it's clear that you're there doing some kind of event?
Even if we need to pull a permit for a park, like let's say I'm doing a one of my personal projects, not a paid project or anything like that, but I need to pull a permit for being there. We have to have insurance. So it's you know, it definitely does save our back, because like then, you know, if somebody says, oh, I tripped over your light stand, or oh, I tripped over your camera case while you're shooting there, and they decide to sue you or the city.
Yeah, it's a crazy world.
It's covered.
And New York takes it one step further. And in addition to all of that, we actually have to have workers' compensation insurance, even if we do not have employees. So if I have an assistant, if I have somebody coming on location who's helping me on the shoot, even if they're not being paid, even if they're not on my payroll, I have to have liability insurance. Workers' compensation insurance to cover them.
That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, like I make sure all my subcontractors have insurance. So like I don't have any employees on staff. Everybody's contract workers, but everybody has to have their own liability insurance as well. It's too risky now because, you know, if one of my assistants trips off of a ladder or falls off a ladder, who's liable?
There is the conservative side of me that says, you know what, if we didn't have insurance at all, it wouldn't be needed because, you know, like there wouldn't be as many frivolous lawsuits. People wouldn't be taking advantage of things. Not that that's neither here nor there right now, but that's in my little dream world. I'm like, you know,
I would rather pay a couple thousand bucks a year for all my insurance instead of lose all my assets. So, yeah. I mean, I consider it a good night's sleep policy.
Yeah, and like if you're doing commercial work, it's especially important, right? Like doing weddings and portraits, it's not as needed or as important. But as soon as you get talent on set, that is the worst. So like, you know, if I had an NHL player trip over one of my cords when we were shooting the campaign, that would have just blown up and we would have been liable. So, you know, you could imagine if one player can't play for four games, you know, just because they tripped on a lighting cord, right?
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You make the point that the $25 a roll for gaffer's tape, you know, that's pretty cheap insurance when it comes to.
Definitely. Gaffer tape is the most amazing thing, I must say.
Wait, is it better than duct tape?
Oh yeah. The reason it's amazing because it doesn't leave a residue.
You can put it on a wall or on a carpet, and you're not going to damage the wall or the carpet.
Interesting. I'm looking now. Here it is on Amazon. It's available with Prime
good
shipping.
You want to get good stuff, though. I mean, if it's like $5 a roll, I wouldn't trust.
Here's
that.
One that's five-star reviews. JVCC has five-star reviews on this Amazon stuff.
I still buy the old what's it called, the Permacell. They basically discontinued it. Was what I was using when I was an assistant years ago, and they discontinued it, and they've brought it back out again. But it's super expensive, but it's the best gaffers tape you can get.
Yeah, and ProGaff is amazing. ProGaff
That's what they the Permacell has been rebranded as ProGaff.
Yeah, very, very
that's
amazing.
What it is. Nice. Yeah.
Anyway, yes, I think we better wrap here. It's getting late, and I gotta start tidying up and get these files imported before I head home.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, Jonathan.
That was my pleasure.
You guys have a Merry Christmas.